Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal and the works of Thomas Harris. I'm Cooper, and with me I have...
Hi, it's Miko.
And this is Ophelia.
And it's bittersweet today.
Oh.
You know, this is... Yeah. This is it. This is potentially it for the series, as we're dealing with Season 3, Episode 13, The Wrath of the Lamb. I looked up online. We started this show 14 months ago on July 7th, 2014. We have covered a lot in 14 months. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Last July.
I know. I can't believe it.
We started this show right away. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was reading it on the trip here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I finished it. When I got here, and then we started basically like the minute, you know,
the minute we got a chance to.
Yeah. The minute we were pretty much settled, like, enough.
We have covered so much ground on this show, and this series has covered so much ground. This is not going to be the series eulogy.
No.
Because I think I've actually been thinking about this. We're going to do the movies, and then I'd like to do an episode to wrap up our entire experience with Hannibal adaptations.
Okay.
And that will be the eulogy.
That will be the eulogy.
We'll go through all of that then. Before we sat down here tonight, we watched two awesome videos, and I'm going to link to them in the show notes. First, we watched a Hannibal and Friends mashup.
Which I loved.
Which
awesome. Amazingly culls all the happy scenes from this entire series, apparently.
Every smile anyone had.
Into and Alana even gets to run with the dogs.
I know.
She's running with the dogs, and then it's a picture of her all snazzy dressed, and she's smiling.
And smiling, And so that was a lot of fun. And there's also a wonderful video that was made of the first conversation between Will and Hannibal in the book Red Dragon. And they assembled in pieces from all three adaptations, from Manhunter, from Red Dragon, and from this show.
Brian Fuller's
And novel. It's really stunning to see the differences. And it also makes me realize that what the hell was Brett Ratner doing with his color correction there?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It looked
Good
really
Lord,
weird.
It looked shitty.
They looked weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's,
especially next to Manhunter, which was Manhunter, come on.
Well, Manhunter is bright white.
It's
very stark. Basically, you could call the movie bright white. All the reviews I've been going through reviews and you know, there's a lot of think pieces about Hannibal online
now
because we're at the end of the series, and. Multiple reviews have talked about, would it kill anybody to hang up a picture in their houses or offices in Manhunter? It's just stark white walls everywhere. Big, empty white walls. So it's unusual.
It'd be interesting to go back and see if that's a budget thing.
I imagine that's entirely an aesthetic choice.
They just wanted everything to just look...
I could see Michael Mann just really liking that look.
It's
very sterile. It's very hospital. Well, even hospitals have pictures. Something for you to look at while they stick you with a needle.
I know. It is the 80s. Usually you have, I don't know, like a Nagel.
Yeah,
print
put Nagel up there. Nagel would give the, absolutely.
A neon art piece.
So, you know, maybe a triangle with some zigzags over it and some vertical
and some
lines.
Vertical lines.
Something
I
did in art class in like 10th grade.
Yes.
The era of the Lisa Frank poster, is really, it's...
I don't think that would be in any scene that's in Manhunter.
I don't think so.
Hannibal Lecter doesn't have any hang in there.
That's what Hannibal Lecter is sketching, is Nagels.
Is Nagels, that's what it is.
He can't use the computer, because why would you let Hannibal Lecter use the computer?
I really want a picture of Hannibal in his cell with the hanging kitten and the hang in there poster in the cell. Hang in there, baby.
Well, we have already gotten our Hannibal signal picture.
Yes.
And thank you to our awesome meme-generating fan. So Hannibal cell with Hang In There Baby. There is a video of Hannibal cell from Silence of the Lambs, that tracking shot that goes into Hannibal cell, and the walls are lined with, I think, Japanese pop art.
That's so awesome.
It's so surreal because it's completely perfectly assembled with that
tracking
pan.
Shot.
Oh, so I gotta see this.
So it's just like a 10-year-old girl wallpapered Hannibal's cell.
Oh, I gotta get this.
I have to see.
I gotta find this.
I love
this
that idea
it.
Of putting like teen
stuff on the walls.
Up.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hannibal's.
I don't have a way to look it up near me.
Okay, give me a moment.
I must see this.
I love it.
I don't even know how to look that up.
You probably can't find it.
Oh, the first
yes.
one.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my god, it's all anime. Hentai. Oh my god, it's all hentai. There's totally tentacle monsters in there.
Oh my god, it is. Hello Kitty.
Wait, I want to see it.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to put it in the show notes.
Yes.
That's important. Because otherwise, we're being very shitty to our listeners.
Oh, I was just about to say that. I was like, now our fans listening,
our fans will
listening
to
us, going, "What are they looking
if
at?
If we
what
want to see
at?
This, it is. This badly. Someone else must want to.
It is
Naruto. There's Naruto.
Really awesome. What's on that wall?
Trying to pick out everything.
I don't remember what I was
Sonic the
reading
Hedgehog.
When I first saw that. I think it was just a review.
Oh, My Little Pony Friendship is Magic.
Yay!
Is totally on the wall.
Oh, I got MLP.
Hannibal's big fan.
Gotta have MLP on there. You would think that, you know, Hannibal
Pokemon,
would learn a lot.
There's
from
definitely
MLP.
Pokemon in there.
Well, good.
I'm trying to pick it all out. Like, that should be this should be the fan thing.
Oh,
pick out as,
pick
many
out as many
things
you
as
find.
You can recognize in the GIF.
Well, if you are not listening to this on our website, go to our website. Mm-hmm. Scroll down. Odds are this animated GIF is on there at this moment in time for you. So let's get started with tonight's episode.
Oh, sure.
Now that you distracted me with Japanese art.
The big thing going into this episode is, will it resolve the show in a satisfactory way? Because, again, odds are
they're not
this is the last
movie.
We get.
Yes.
There may be a movie, there may be something else, and we
I'd
want that, of course.
I'd say the odds are like 60-40.
More in favor or less in favor?
I'd say more in favor.
Okay.
I'm going to say more in favor. I'm going to be optimistic with a glass half full or 60% full.
Even so, we needed something that could satisfactorily wrap up the series.
Yeah, and that's what I like about this episode.
It does.
Yeah.
And when asked about it, you know, the night it aired, and we're just going to pretend that was Thursday, I said specifically, this is not as good an hour of television as Mizumono.
Mm-hmm.
That is nearly perfect. That is probably the finest hour of television I've ever seen. This is a far better finale for a series than Mizumono would have been. This is a far better, I think it's a far better season finale than Mizumono was. It has its problems, period. Just like this arc has its problems, just like this season has its problems. But the audacious nature of it all, it's breathtaking.
Yeah. Rare is a season finale or show, whatever, finale, anything, where you're left with that, my chin has hit the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend about a half an hour afterwards wow.
Just the Bedelia part. Like, my brain is still like, I don't understand.
And we sit in silence after, we've sat in silence after every finale here, just mouth agape.
Yes.
Taking it in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of unwilling to believe we've actually just witnessed this.
Yes.
Did I just watch that?
I think there was, I don't know whether it was during, no, it was actually during the show. I think it was when the first really graphic thing happens. I did turn to everybody and go, did we just see that?
Yeah.
Did that just happen?
Did that just happen?
Yeah.
But it was. We were.
Are we watching NBC?
Yeah, I know.
This can't be NBC.
A good majority of the show did not feel at all like network television.
No, it did not.
And it was. And then, you know, we all went online. You know, Coop did Reddit and I, you know, went on Twitter. And it was amazing to watch the collective brains of fanables explode. Almost everything was like, wow, oh my God, I can't sleep after this. What the hell was that?
I actually had Hannibal dreams.
I did too.
After that.
I did.
Totally had a Hannibal dream. It made absolutely no sense.
Mine did. I couldn't even like try to
explain
it.
But the Wendigo was everywhere.
Oh, wow.
There were antlers all over the place.
Wow.
It was
I was disappointed we didn't see the Wendigo. I was disappointed.
Oh, you wanted everybody to have like their last goodbye?
I wanted a moment in that last fight where
the three of them,
Dollar-Eyed as the dragon, looks to the left, sees the Raven Stag, looks to the right, sees the Wendigo, and then it's just the three of them again.
Oh, there we go.
They didn't everybody's
spirit animal.
Yeah.
Clashing. Yes. But it would have been cool. It would have been interesting. And it would have been just a callback that we haven't gotten again. We had that brief Wendigo, and we had the brief Raven Stag in the last arc, but really not much at all.
No. Well, I think, too, I don't know what the, you know, if they hadn't thought of it. I just feel like as they progressed in this, the time and time constraint and the budget constraints can be seen all over the place. They did amazing work for the as little time as they had and as little money they had.
No, it's
because there are shows with more time and more money
that can't
that
even
don't look
come close.
A tenth as beautiful and well produced as the show is. But because we hold it in, we have a higher bar for Hannibal. There are times
have a higher bar
for Hannibal. There are times where we're like, oh well, why didn't they do this? Or they should have spent more. Well, why? And then
or why teeth?
Yeah, or why? Yeah, or why CGI?
Because everything else has been perfect,
but
except
for
teeth.
I am prepared to forgive the teeth for the excellent usage of CGI in this episode. Mm-hmm. It was restrained.
Yes.
It was smartly used, and it was beautiful.
Yes.
So, bravo! I have forgiven the teeth.
There we go. You've let it go.
I will
You've
let
released
it, go.
It to the universe.
All right. Let's not do that.
You did it.
No, I know. I might be talking to myself. Don't judge.
I was trying not to get drawn in because I sing that song a lot.
Don't judge me.
It's a wonderful song.
Don't judge me, monkey.
Let's start at Dollarite's house.
Okay.
With Reba.
With Reba.
The immediate aftermath of the end of the last episode. I love how telegraphed Dollar-Eyed was being, how cunning he was being here.
Oh, yeah. He was
feel my chest,
shit together.
Feel my neck. Mm. Feel the key. Okay. Mm. Do you hear the, you know.
Do you know where you are in the house?
And he walked her back and forth to make sure she knew the way to get out of that room.
All thought out. I like the way this was a cut in from the last we saw on Hannibal. Opening, because sometimes they do all like the flashes and everything, and then they do the last thing. Usually the last thing is kind of like a that's right, that happened, and then they lead into something completely different. The last thing was that I am the dragon,
right? And then
we just pick it up right from there, and I was like, oh, that was gorgeous. It made me cry. It was beautiful. I've gone back and I've reread everything from basically just shortly before this to the end of the book, and we are getting Red Dragon.
Yes,
as I said last week, it's like as I go through it, it's almost all the dialogue. It's almost dialogue that is just direction and words and not actual dialogue in the book. Is we are cherry picking is gone. We are word from. So I love though that the recreation of it is amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Armitage is Dollar-Eyed, and this is so, you know, and later on, especially when he says that I have control over over the dragon.
Yeah,
it's
like I'm in control.
Yeah,
now.
You see that.
Armitage is really spectacular.
Right here.
He's amazing.
Oh, just this whole scene is spectacular.
Yeah.
You really get to see him at his best at this point. We saw wonderful stuff with him last episode, but he dominates at the beginning of this episode.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I love that Reba looks like she's about to blind him.
Yes.
When she's going up and she's bringing her hands up.
Yeah.
There's something so visceral about that. It's like she's scrappy. She is ready to do what she needs to do to survive this. And one thing that is very evident in the book that was not made clear here. I mean, if we think about it, a blind person being afraid of fire makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
Because especially the disorientation, the smoke. But it's made very clear in the book that one of Reba's really huge fears is being burned.
Mm-hmm.
And so this moment when Dollar-Eyed is setting the house on fire, that reaction, that Rutina Wesley gives is
it's amazing.
Yeah.
And her corridor through the smoke and fire, that was so well played, mm-hmm. all of that.
Even when he drops the match into the flame.
Yeah.
The way
the fear.
It's like it fell into the flame and just the beautiful way the flames spread out. It's a great insert shot, and it's that.
Not since Ron Howard's Backdraft have we seen such beautiful fire.
Oh my God! Wow. You had to bring up Backdraft.
I don't know. I liked the fire in the engine of Hannibal's motorcycle.
That was
that was pretty beautiful.
But we've always had these beautiful arty moments, these inserts, which are always just exquisite.
My favorite from this scene was when she's going through the hallway and the fire is like water.
Yes, up the ceiling. Oh, yeah, the way fire crawls.
And Reba is amazing in this because it is, as you mentioned, there's things that you don't know because it's not in dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's going on in here, things like her fears. And,
yeah.
And all of that where she's going for his eyes, mm-hmm. and the way she grabs the muzzle. You actually get her internal dialogue in the book where that is her goal, mm-hmm. and that he prevents her from doing it. So I loved that she was able to take things that you can't speak about.
She showed it through the performance. Actions truly spoke louder than words.
Yeah, you got all of that stuff. Everything that the written word tells us she's thinking internally, she showed us very well. I saw all of that and everything that she was doing. It's very powerful.
So how about the head getting blown open here? I think that was the moment where we were like, wait, are we watching that? Did that just happen?
Yeah.
NBC, my.
I thought I had seen about
the most shotgun blast graphic. To the head is it's about as graphic as it gets.
And
for,
to pull
for
back
crime
through that the head. Grizzly head.
Yeah, I think that's probably what got me more than ever. If we had just seen a quick shot from far away and saw, the partially the head that most of it's a hole.
Yeah.
And then we were out of the shot. I would have been like, oh, wow. Okay. No, we see Reba and the camera pulls back
through it. Yeah.
Through the head. So we get to see all the inside. mm-hmm. And then we're looking at her through it before the body falls away. And it is gruesome. And then we get to see it again.
Yeah. When she's trying to stick her hand in it.
Yeah. It's not enough just to say it in the other scene, man. We got to see it.
I do want to call attention to one line that I think Richard Armitage delivered so wonderfully in here. He will bite you.
Yes. I wrote that down too.
I have that there too.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about the finale of the first season of Sherlock and the performance of the actor who plays Moriarty in it, because he plays him like nothing else. You know, his Moriarty is like Heath Ledger's Joker, is like Johnny Depp as Hunter Thompson, just this weird sort of otherness. And the "he will bite you" is so intense, but light and weak, but strong. It was so odd.
What he will do. He will bite you.
Yes.
And almost afraid at the same time.
Well, yeah, because he doesn't want the dragon to get her. I mean, clearly, because he chooses not to.
Mm-hmm. Because he's more powerful than the dragon.
Right.
Exactly.
He's in control.
But it's also interesting because he's not actually doing.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
What do you think he's doing here?
On rewatch, I was really thinking about that. You know, he's going through all this pathos and struggle, and we're supposed to feel so bad for him. But he's not actually doing any of it.
Yeah.
He's just setting her theoretically on fire.
He's pulling the sympathy card.
He is.
He's
playing that hard.
But to be honest, he's actually doing a good guy move here.
He is letting her go. He's letting her go to the police.
Right.
He's walking away.
Right.
Okay. That's true.
He's not letting the dragon win. He is, in fact.
I can't stand to watch you burn.
Well, no, he actually can't. He's going to let her leave. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. It sounds dramatic and whatever because he's putting on the show because he wants Reba to think he's dead,
right?
So that she can tell the police that he's dead. But he truly doesn't want her to die. He doesn't want to shoot her. He doesn't want to burn her. He doesn't want to kill her. change her. So he actually is.
This is his act of mercy.
Yeah. It's almost like he gets to kill two birds with one stone here. He gets to let her go.
And get away.
Have
a getaway.
Have a getaway.
Yeah.
I can let her live by and also having her be the people who convince people what I need to know.
The other beautiful thing about Reba's exit from this scene post shotgun blast is that Debussy is back.
Yes, playing softly in the background.
And sort of echoey in that shining Colorado lounge way, you know, mm-hmm. that echoey, it's playing off in the distance somewhere mm-hmm. as she's listening to the clock. It's really
because she's just trying to piece it together, you know,
just
what
a beautiful
remembers.
Moment, yeah. Yep. And the stag burning on mm-hmm. the wall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, we did get some antlers.
Exactly. I have to have some stag reference in an episode.
No raven stag, no wendigo, but we got some antlers.
A little foreshadowing there. Yeah, all these things are coming to a head.
they are. Specifically a stag head
mounted to the wall. On fire.
On fire.
I made a little a note here to myself that the last time we talked about this, we talked about the difference between Reba just being shown in the van and what she'd been done beforehand. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if we had figured it out, but I went back and read about it. And she was, when Dollar Eyed captures her, when he goes to get her, she is coming home from a date.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And then in both movie adaptations, I believe the guy she was on a date with is the guy who winds up headless.
Yeah. They kind of
in the book, it is Arnold, the service station guy. Who was a dick to Reba earlier in the book.
And then what was sad about the poor guy, though, the date that gets knocked off, is that she was actually breaking up with him and saying, I am not going to see you anymore because I'm going to be serious with somebody else.
Yeah, there's somebody else I'm interested in.
Yeah, he asked for a kiss, and she gave it anyway, even though she was never going to see him again.
She is committed to the Red Dragon.
And unfortunately,
the dragon doesn't share.
Yeah, the D saw that and just...
It woke the dragon.
It woke the dragon. But yeah, exactly. But that dude wound up being left in a bush.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Yeah.
He had no significant role to play.
No.
At all.
And in Red Dragon, the film, it was Frank Whaley.
Oh, we had forgotten about that.
Who was young Moonlight Graham in Field of Dreams.
In Field of Dreams. Oh my God.
This is a good point to talk about the divergence here. Mm-hmm. Because from here on out, nothing is the same as the book.
No, a good majority of it is the same as the book.
Only Reba in the hospital bed. The rest is not. It's all the plan to release Hannibal.
That's a little different. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I'm getting thrown off because we get back to full dialogue later on. We just severely changed that whole thing about the escape thing is different.
So in the book, Dollaride's escape is to enact his revenge on Will Graham. Mm-hmm. And that's where the home invasion comes in with Molly and Willie in the book. And it's a really intense scene. And I was wondering how they were going to do that because they had a home invasion with Molly and son earlier in the series. And as much as they are willing to recycle things again, I didn't think they were going to do that.
No, and I'm glad they didn't because having Molly be the person who dispatches would not have been what we needed to see at the end of this
episode. It would not have given us catharsis.
No. I think
what we got was what we needed.
Yes. Oh, totally. So I'm glad that they did that a little differently. Yeah. They're also playing that story arc a little differently. So we really didn't get into the tension between how terrible the tension was between Will and Molly.
Yes.
You know, and how uncomfortable they were. And when she goes and stays with the in-laws in Oregon, how he feels very distant and almost seems like they're going to stay there. And they talk about the dead father a whole lot.
Right.
And then when they come back, and it's interesting, because I wrote it later on, when they talk about the uncomfortable politeness.
Oh, yeah.
It was, that's sort of what happened to them in the book, is that they tried to make it the same and they couldn't.
Right.
It was all this sort of, until that moment happens and it kind of brings them together.
And then Molly gets a taste of
yes, exactly. Killing. And to be in Will's shoes, yeah, in a way, and know what, yeah, that's like. So, but that's not the story
that's,
we needed.
That's
here.
Not this story.
So
no.
I'm so glad that was like the one thing they decided, okay, we are not going to do that out of, right, the book. So that was a good choice.
A scene that is direct from the novel is Reba and Will in the hospital.
Yes, including the sucking of the
ice.
Of,
yes,
the ice. Yeah.
I really liked her panicked repetition of shot him in the, yeah, face, mm-hmm, shot himself in the face.
I put my hand in it. Yeah. She says that repeatedly, which, yeah, you would do in a traumatic situation.
You're trying to get your brain around what you just experienced.
Right. It's yeah, your brain is having a short circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the gentleness in Will. Mm-hmm. We, yes, see the wanting to be the good guy, the protector here. Because he says, I won't put you through this again, but I'd like to come back and say hi.
Yeah.
See you again.
Check up on you.
And he reassures her that in the end he couldn't kill her and he couldn't watch her die and that she probably saved at least one family.
Yeah.
Right.
By being there, by helping the man stop the monster.
Yeah. Well, she, you know, when he goes to leave, when she realizes that she is having, she's taking a lot of this very, like, so personally in a way,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
where she blames sort of herself for this. Well, yeah, like I attracted this guy, and she makes sort of like a glib joke of, oh, you know, why wouldn't you be back? I'm a charmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's like, oh, well, I attracted a freak.
I drew a freak.
And, you know, he really helps her through that.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you didn't draw a freak. You draw a man.
With a freak on his back.
Which is actually kind of giving Dollarhide some credit, too.
Mm-hmm.
Not just saying that, no, you didn't just draw a freak, but there was this man, he had problems,
yeah,
and we all have problems.
Exactly. And acknowledging that he, you know, it's like there was...
His problem was just bigger and scarier than most people.
Right. Because he was, at a point, a loving partner.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, they were having a good
time. And was trying very hard not to be the dragon.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was, this was a man struggling with mental, yeah, illness.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, a freak. And to not let yourself think that there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And it was just beautiful, you know, how he was like, well, you know, he cared about you. And he wanted to stop because of you, and you saved,
yeah,
lives.
I felt like something that really stood out was, you're not just blind,
mm-hmm,
was what he said to her. And it felt like you aren't just your disability, and you aren't just your mental illness, and you aren't just your, you know, twisted sense of self,
mm-hmm,
which I think he can speak very personally about.
Right.
And I think that's, to me, that's kind of what it rang out with, was you found someone and you had a good time and you had these good memories. He's not just the dragon, and you're not just blind. We're not,
right,
we're, yeah, not our weaknesses, mm-hmm, or our shortcomings.
Right. And that she can rise above this and to think,
yeah,
of the good things that came out of this and not, you know, the awful ending.
Yeah.
And Will is really feeling the kinship with Dollarhide here, too,
mm-hmm,
because he's, you know, you didn't draw a freak, you drew a man with a freak on his back,
mm-hmm,
is very much the same thing that could be said to Molly if Will is, you,
yeah,
know, when Molly's out on the back porch with one of her girlfriends drinking a little White's Infidel, talking about Will. She seems
like a beer girl to me.
She does seem,
yeah,
like a beer,
I think, girl. I think she drinks beer.
Yeah.
Or red,
maybe,
wine.
Maybe a lager.
Deep red wine. Maybe a lager. Okay. but I love the that she tries to be wary of people who foster dependency and feed on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Will really connects with that line, because Hannibal Lecter is a person that fosters dependency. And I really felt the Hannibal as addiction metaphor. In this episode.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've also got the analogy with the freak on its back, monkey on his back.
Absolutely. So. But if Hannibal's an addiction, that's why Will keeps walking back
just,
into yeah. that.
Just
he
can't
doesn't
quit you.
Want to be there. He doesn't want to need whatever it is that Hannibal fulfills in him.
He can't
and,
help it.
I mean, it's very clear from this episode and the ending that Brian Fuller is going all in, pushing his chips in on the these two men are in love storyline.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt.
The thing that I think a lot of people who are reading that storyline are missing is him specifically saying this is not a sexual relationship.
No.
This is not these two men are gay. They're going to have a sexual and romantic relationship together. And one, you know, that's not what this is. That's not who Hannibal is.
No.
So, I mean, the fact that Hannibal loves Will is... can be taken as, oh, he's in love with Will, you know, Hannibal's gay. Hannibal's not gay. He's something else. Hannibal is, I really feel like he's a creature who has never seen anything like himself.
Oh, yeah.
Until he met Will. And that alone is what drives Hannibal's love for Will, is seeing something that's almost him mm-hmm. and trying to manipulate the situation to make him more like him. So he will never, ever leave.
Yes.
Because what are the odds he will find that again?
Exactly.
What do you think of that?
Part of me is like, no, don't dash my hopes for the kissing scene.
So you're actually Team Hannagram then?
I don't want to sign myself to a team. Because I do agree with the fact that
you can be on Team Winston. It's okay. I'm on Team Winston.
Okay. Well,
as long as that dog's okay, really.
You don't care what happens on the show.
Wow. Okay. No, I don't want to assign myself to entire camp of
no, sure.
what it should be. Because I do agree that Hannibal and his love for things is very otherworldly, and I think he can probably mentally satisfy himself without having sex. I think he's mm-hmm. he's kind of an asexual being to me.
Yeah.
I don't think assigning
it seems
sex
like the only sex he has in this series is
food.
For gain. Well, I'm talking about actual
no, when
physical
he, when
sex
he does,
with
oh,
other people.
Like, oh,
okay. Alana
okay.
and presumably Bedelia.
Right.
Yeah.
It's for some sort of gain.
Coercion.
Some mm-hmm. sort of manipulation, some sort of retaining of a hold. Okay. I mean, we could also, if we need to assign sexuality to Hannibal, and I feel we don't, but if we do, he may be the very definition of omnisexual, pansexual. Mm-hmm. He is a being who, if interested in something, someone, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Nothing else matters there. And I feel like a lot of people are just taking the easy way out and saying, oh, no, gay showrunner Brian Fuller just wants to make his two lead characters gay.
I don't agree.
And
with
I don't
that.
Think
yeah,
that's what it is.
I don't think that's what it is either. And I like the idea that.
I don't want you to take my fantasy away, but I'm not trying to say what the show is trying to do.
Tumblr is full.
I know.
Of the, I mean. Your fantasy will never be scrubbed from the internet.
Yeah, it is a permanent record.
It is impossible. There is so much erotic / art of Hannibal and Will that, you know.
And I have a thing for Draco Malfoy and Harry Potter getting it on. I know that's not J.K. Rowling's intention, but I don't care.
Man, the pasty white sex that would be. In centuries from now, people will look back at our civilization and wonder what was with these two guys and all the weird food sex. What was that about?
Foodgasms.
It may outlive the rest of the Hannibal Lecter canon.
Just that alone.
That alone. The / Hannagram.
Hannagram.
Stuff.
Yeah. So we're not telling. Yeah. And that's the thing. We can't take that fantasy away from you.
Well, one thing, Brian Fuller. Okay. So Brian Fuller's been talking a lot.
Yeah,
yep.
As he is wont to do.
Can't help it.
I am choosing to ignore several things he has said.
Okay.
I'm not.
But One thing he did say that I found rather interesting is that moment at the end, and we obviously we will get there, but that moment at the end when they embrace, I mean, you felt like the kiss was coming, right?
There was a very vague possibility.
Okay, because the reason you felt like the kiss was coming is they actually shot further. So the kiss very, very much almost happened. So like lips hovering above lips, you know, the breathing each other's last breaths there. And Brian Fuller wisely, I think, said that might be a little bit too much pandering to the fanables right there.
Yeah.
And stepped it back.
I can see his temptation to give in. But he loves to give gifts to fans.
It may be on the Blu-ray, which would be the greatest gift of all.
To see that, I'd rewind.
I'd pay money.
Animated GIF?
Shut up and take my money.
Just constantly just hitting that 30-second backwards replay.
The way people do with other forms of entertainment.
Certain forms. In the VHS era, you may wear out a whole portion of
totally,
the tape.
Totally.
It's like, why is this full frontal Rebecca De Mornay on The Risky Business? Why is it all snowy here? Well, or to go the other way, the All the Right Moves scene with where you supposedly can see Tom Cruise's penis. We're just going to go with the Tom Cruise in full frontal nudity. Right.
Let's not go there because now
double-edged sword.
That's a boner killer right there. Just that's not.
I'm not into Tom Cruise.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's move on to the Norman Chapel.
Let's.
Which I had confirmed for me today is a real place. I was unsure. If it was a real place, it is.
I saw the pictures.
The Norman Chapel on this show is a set, and it is the largest set they ever built for this series.
It is.
And what's really cool is above the first level, almost all the backgrounds are green screen, but they have the hanging icons in front of the green screen. So some of it's real.
And
the best thing I learned, I watched a TV Guide video on the making of this set.
I know, I wanted to see that.
Is all the marble, all the intricate mosaics are printed on the material used to build the set.
Really?
Because printer technology has gotten far enough that even in HD, it is indistinguishable.
Wow.
Unless you get up there and see that there is no depth whatsoever.
Right. But from the distance that we're seeing it at and the way it's lit, it looks dimensional.
But everything is printed right on the I assume, foam core boards used to build this set.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Which is stunning. And I can't wait to watch the DVD extras.
I have to go watch this because I don't think it's foam core, but it's probably something very lightweight.
Yeah, very lightweight and simple.
Similar to that. But that is still just spectacular that they were able to do that.
That's awesome.
So in the Norman Chapel, in Miko, we haven't talked about Hannibal's suits in a while because he hasn't been wearing them.
I know.
Let's talk about the window pane suit.
Exactly.
He peeks in.
And I think I said this in episode or two. Let's scratch that, reverse it. Episode or two ago. Maybe I need to slow down on the wine.
Miko, what are you drinking tonight?
A gigantic glass of port. And I'm enjoying every bit of it.
That's a fine finale drink.
Yes.
It is.
I'm drowning my tears in port.
And Hannibal.
And that, what I love about intercutting between the sort of, you know, the real-time cell drab stuff with the memory palace is that we get to see Hannibal in his suits again.
Yeah.
And they've only done this in about one or two episodes, and this suit is like one of my favorites. You know,
this yellow suit.
Yes, it's sort of like this pale yellow window pane. He's got one of those gorgeous paisley silk ties and the dark shirt underneath, and it was like, thank you, because this is the Hannibal that we remember, the Hannibal we saw in every episode in the first two seasons. And it was really nice to see him in all his glory. And I also love that here he was in all his glory and he was pinching,
snuffing out a candle.
Yes.
Yeah, candles at a church.
And specifically pinching out with his fingers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
before Will tells him that the dragon is dead,
exactly.
He is in there. assuming the dragon is dead. Yes. Or will probably wouldn't be here.
I also like the implication, because when you go into a chapel and light a candle, it's to say, you say a prayer and light a candle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all the candles you see in a chapel are the representations of the prayers that those people have given. So I love.
Here comes Dickhead Hannibal.
Yeah. Just a little satanic.
For you. Your prayers ain't going to make it to God today.
Snuffing out their prayers.
Gee, do you think God's going to answer your prayers?
Exactly. I don't know. That's what I was thinking when he was doing. Exactly.
Will has a line that does not really fit him, but he's in weird cocky mode this episode.
He's
sort of speaking in catchphrases a few times. Ding dong, the dragon's dead. And immediately Hannibal comes back with our congratulations in order.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, it's not a very nice congratulations.
It is not.
Because he spends a lot of time basically like calling him out in a lot of this congratulations, especially when he starts talking about Chilton.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. I loved him saying he was rooting for Will. But it's a shame, came all this way and you didn't get to kill anybody. Only consolation is Dr. Chilton.
Yes.
Good
congratulations on the job you did on him. I admired it enormously. What a cunning boy
you are.
Clever boy.
So lovely.
And you can tell Will is like, what do you mean by that? And then he like starts to realize, wait, are you saying I did that? And you could totally see all that playing in his face. Like, he's implying that I did that on purpose. And then there's
Chilton sure is.
Chilton's implying it. Bedelia's implying it. Hannibal's implying it.
Yeah.
The enemy inside Will agrees with the accusation a little bit.
Yeah. I think Will knows.
I think he came to a realization.
Yeah.
Though I think he was trying for a while to deny.
Oh, yeah.
Even though in his heart of hearts, that was exactly what he was doing.
Well, especially the horrific thing that has happened to this human being.
Oh, yes.
Who is not, unlike the book, going to die.
Yeah, right.
I don't know which is worse.
Yeah.
I mean, Chilton in the oxygen tent getting skin grafts to slowly start to resemble a human being again.
Yes.
Or, I mean, you know, if he lives, something terrible is going to happen to him next year.
He's becoming like some sad cartoon character. Like, we should have Chilton with a little dark cloud with rain coming, just following him around.
Like
well, Brian Fuller specifically mentioned that if he does get to do Silence of the Lambs, the idea of Chilton horribly disfigured back in charge of the asylum is extremely appealing to him.
Wow. That is an image right there.
Hey, if it gets us more Roel Esparza, I'm all in.
I would watch.
He's disfigured. He's really, in his loud suits and he's walking
angry,
those hallways.
Spin off Roel Esparza and our CSI geeks.
Oh, Price and Zeller?
Yeah. And, well, I mean, that would work all by itself. But
Are they going to be like a crime show?
Yeah.
You know, kind of like it's Ironside? Because he's in the
just like Ironside. But I would totally watch that. So then Hannibal's a dick again with, you can go home again if there's any point. Yeah. Is there any point?
Is there a point?
And that it won't be the same. And then there's a line you mentioned, when life becomes maddeningly polite. Think about me. Think about Will.
I love how he also adds, don't worry about me.
Don't worry about me, but think about me.
I love the way Will feels like he's won this discussion when he really hasn't. But he puts his hand on the glass, sort of daring Hannibal to go to put his hand up there so he can take it away. And Hannibal doesn't rise to that bait. But he seems to be wanting to take credit for Hannibal turning himself in.
Oh, yeah. The only reason why you did it is because
I rejected you.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, you know, I made this happen because I knew if I rejected you, you'd have to turn yourself in. So
they'd always know where I am. You'd always know where I am.
And the last line here, was it good to see me? Good?
No.
No.
No. The thing that
so good
that I got out of this too was how he talks about it, that you the only reason you know why he's there is because of Will.
So he'll always know,
Where it is. And yeah. I feel like what the hint that's going on here is I got you here because I rejected you.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're using this as, well, now you will always know where I'm at. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he's going to do something to get Hannibal out of there. Because if he does, then Hannibal's out in the world and he doesn't ever have to know where he's at.
Yeah.
And that
I don't want to know where you are. All
exactly.
Time.
And I actually thought that.
So you were on board
moment.
With the, you were,
before
you were.
Before we
on...
even got there.
Wow.
Yeah. That was exactly my thought process right there. And I'm like, he's going to find a way to get Hannibal out there and release him into the world because then he will not know exactly where Hannibal is. And Hannibal can never have that hold over him.
Yeah.
If he's out in the world, he doesn't have to think. It's sort of like, I'm not going to think about you.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there. You're doing your thing. I don't know.
Hannibal's
you.
Probably going to send him Christmas cards with recipes in them.
It's yeah. true.
But I think it's easier
One
for him
all the holidays.
To handle.
Do you think Bedelia got a Christmas
himself.
Card with a how to cook your leg recipe in it?
Well, I mean, that's been debunked, hasn't
well,
it?
Well, yes. We'll get there. Too.
Yes, yes. But I like I had actually a mental image of like 101 ways to cook your leg.
Send a whole cookbook?
Yes.
A whole by book. Hannibal Lecter.
By Hannibal Lecter.
The French art of cooking your leg.
Forward by Gideon.
Yes. But then, you know, pretty much right after this, and I think that's what when I had that thought, and then all of a sudden...
Well, yeah. Will walks away and gets grabbed by Dollaride.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I knew that was Dollaride's scam in the book, the shooting the guy in the head. Mm. But at the same time, I mentioned last week, I felt like maybe they'd wrap up Dollaride's story in the last episode so we can really break down Will and Hannibal into whatever this new direction is that I think I know what Brian Fuller's doing and I'm not happy about it. So I thought, wouldn't it be another great psych out for the audience, for us in the audience, the book readers, the movie watchers in the audience.
Oh, to not give us that.
For Dollaride to actually be dead.
Shot himself.
Because wouldn't that have been a what the fuck? Really? Crazy.
I think I would have been
disappointed. Yeah.
Because it would have been too abrupt
cheap.
And yeah,
a little cheap,
exactly. And I'm glad they didn't because
well,
I think what
absolutely.
They did with it
what
was
they,
still
what they did.
You
is
got both. You got
awesome.
A wonderful wrap up.
I did,
and you got you know a lot of things sort of wrapped up here. So he did a lot with all the ingredients.
Very true. We get more slow motion water being poured, which looks a stunning amount like gasoline being poured.
It did.
And was an impressively beautiful cascade of water out of a single motel cup.
Yes, exactly.
As we see Dollaride.
It was a lot of water out of a motel cup. You're right.
And Dollaride has that tone again that he had with Chilton when he was asking Chilton if he was cold, if he needed a blanket. When he says, do you think you can sit up?
Yeah.
Try to sit up.
Exactly. I thought that too, that it was
very
similar.
Calm.
Yeah. Even sort of the way he talked to Reba too about go back to the bedroom.
Well, it makes me think that is actually the dragon.
Mm.
Because it's sort of along the lines of the dragon doesn't even need to concern himself with mere mortals.
Mm.
You know, it's not about, I'm not angry with you. I'm not, you know, it's calm because he doesn't have to be agitated.
Mm.
Because how possibly could a human actually agitate the dragon?
But I think, though, the words that he uses implies a certain care.
Mm.
So that's why I find it kind of interesting. Because here he is preparing for often violence or something like that. But he takes the time to go, you know, can you sit up? Like, you really could have just said, you know, sit up.
Yeah,
sit up.
You know, had been very abrupt and very commanding and very. Mm-hmm. Instead, there seems to be almost like a, you know, can you sit up?
And there's really no reason for him to be nice because what is Will going to do about it?
Yeah,
he's not in a position to be like, stop being mean to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything. Like, I always found it so interesting that he gives him the, you know, gives Chilton the blanket. It seems so oddly caring.
It is very...
It's disturbing. Yeah. How, and that's how he is with Will. It's sort of like...
Maybe something he inherited from someone he's related to.
And, you know, and Will
is... Grandma didn't seem very... caring.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's the, here, let me get you some applesauce as I pour cyanide in it.
That's true. Okay.
Like, here's the comfort, and then I light the match.
Mm. Oh.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's the Munchausen syndrome going on.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I like how Will kind of takes it when he's like, oh, can you, you know.
It's a poisonous helping. It's laced with poison. It's like, I will help you.
Yeah, Will's surprise, you didn't break my back.
You didn't break my back.
Yeah, and I loved the way it was kind of in a stupor. Didn't break my back.
Yeah.
What do you make of the, your face is closed to me, and if I can see you, you can see me?
No fear?
I don't know.
The only thing I could think of when he said that, and it's only having dealt with people who can't read facial expressions and body language, that not necessarily that Dollarite is on the spectrum, but that part of his mental illness may be that, that sometimes he can't read people. And maybe that's why he can't tell that you know, the people around him I actually don't think he's a bad person and or don't think he's as abhorrent as he thinks he is.
Yeah.
You know, they actually think he's like a fit, nice, neat guy, but he imagines... You know, that everybody
thinks
is staring at him.
Disfigured, hunchback.
Yeah. So it's, and then also I think Will too, whenever they've dealt with each other, because Will is at this point where he gives no fucks, I think he also presents himself in a very calm and straightforward way. And I don't think a lot of the people around him have been like that.
Sure.
And also you have to remember, Will's going through a lot of stuff with all the Hannibal stuff. With Molly, and I think
he's got a lot on his plate right now.
So it may be then that he is very guarded, or his facial expression. So I sort of got that there was something that was so complex and so unusual about Will that he doesn't present to the world his expressions and everything that's going on the way maybe somebody that he would encounter at work. Or on an everyday basis, or even Reba, where people don't have to be guarded. Will has a lot to be guarded about.
Oh, yeah.
And he has a lot of dark secrets. He's got a lot of stuff going on in his mind. So it just might be that because he's closing himself off in the world to protect his own demons that he's struggling with, that the dragon can't see that. He can't read him, and he can't... You know, I think those people he saw in those movies, he could see the happiness of their expressions. They seemed like, I can tell, even though what he was seeing wasn't actually real.
Right.
A good majority of the time, he wasn't quite reading it well. And I think that kind of scares him, like, I don't know about scares him that well,
unsettles
but makes him seem alien. And yeah. You know,
so do you think Will's, if I can see you, you can see me is just is sort of a what you see is what you get. This is
I think that's what
look
that
at
is.
Me and. Understand that
and also knowing that what's going on in Dollaride with the dragon, it's like, well, I can see you for who you are, so you should be able to see me.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's exactly what he was meaning.
I got a different take. I feel like the I can't read you was that Will didn't show all the signs of fear with the dragon being right across the room. Like when he shows other people the dragon, Will hasn't shown the signs of fear that most people do when they're sitting right across from the dragon. When he shows the dragon to the people before he kills, the Leedses and the Jacobies, they are in fear of him, and they are trying to scramble to protect their kids or scramble to protect their wife or their husband or whatever, fill in the blank. But Will's like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there's a crazy person in the room. Now there's two.
Exactly.
Another
like,
crazy.
Whatever.
Another
so
crazy sons of bitches. Yes.
If you can see me, or if I can see you, then you can see me, makes me feel like Will saying, well, we're equals. We're equally fucked up. We're equally not displaying the types of emotions that an atypical human being would show.
Sure.
Like, we are not the sheep. We are the wolves. And if you can see, if I can see your wolf, you can see my wolf. That's kind of how I took it. Like, we're both we're both not all together there. We're all one crayon short of.
Yeah. It's almost like he's saying, you know, if you really, you're not looking for the right thing.
Yeah.
You're not, you actually are seeing.
Yeah.
What's going on
this,
here? It's
this,
just so different
this is it.
Than what, and I think that's kind of where I was trying to get with the that he, because he's so he has all those things going on.
He's got no emotion.
So, yeah, he's got no emotion.
There's nothing. It's a blank face.
Yeah, he's seen so much and he's experienced so much, especially in the past year. That the dragon,
nothing's phasing.
Yeah,
him.
None
like,
of this.
Like, whatever.
Exactly.
I deal with Hannibal all day. You're
right.
You're nothing.
Yeah, but, cakewalk dragon.
But you definitely explained that you see me thing better than I couldn't quite figure that out. But that could be, that is totally what I think it is.
Yeah.
You like, know, it's that,
predator meet predator.
It's here. You're actually seeing what it is. You just don't realize what you're looking at.
And I think, too, we've already had Will coming to grips with or somewhat agreeing with the fact that he intentionally got Chilton in his position. So I think right now he might be feeling a little bit of that predatory guilt. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I'm responsible for something horrible on top of everything else that I've done.
Right. And it's kind of interesting when Will also continues on how they do the distortion of his voice.
Yeah.
And he starts getting, like, all of a sudden, every couple of words, it was just
the Hannibal echoes.
Like an echo. It was a deep, resonant.
When he said, I understand that blood and breath are only elements undergoing change to fuel your radiance.
Yeah.
And it was a dig to say, that's what Hannibal
said to me.
Yeah. Not to you, to me.
We got your number.
Yeah. You're a wannabe poser.
Dolarite says he wanted to share with Lecter, but was betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
Something Will also has felt, the wanting to share, but have betrayed. And this is where he tells Will that he is stronger than the dragon. Mm-hmm. He chose not to change Reba because he's stronger.
Yeah. I like the throw under the bus Will does.
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know.
I was to say that.
You know what you should do.
Yeah. You know who needs to be changed.
I got somebody in mind.
Yeah. And again, Armitage's understated delivery in this whole scene is just great. With how would I manage that?
Yes, exactly.
I got this.
Yeah.
I got
it
you.
It is a great interaction.
Got you covered.
Because it is. It's sort of like, well, you know. Hannibal Lecter is who you need.
I know a guy.
I know a guy. Yeah, and then it is. It's sort of like,
I can make this happen.
How would I go about that?
Yeah. I got connection.
In that I know you're going to hook me up kind of way. And it is. I know a guy. You know,
hypothetically, we could get that taken care of. I mean, we could have this taken care of by midnight tomorrow night if we wanted to.
Exactly.
We haven't seen a lot of Price and Zeller this season.
No,
but when we have, it has been choice.
Yes.
And this was spectacular.
The grandma's dentures.
The discussion of grandma's dentures, the difference. We get a lot of information in a very short amount of time. There are two sets of dentures, acrylic and vulcanized plate, which is old school style. I loved how they're going back and forth and actually adding to each other until Price starts the Price show.
Yes.
And Zeller just like...
And he just gives up. Yeah.
When we learn Arnold Lang, the service station guy, is the victim, where we get another good view of the blown out head at the beginning of this show.
Charred.
Now charred.
Blown out head.
And Price's, I can't stand to see you burn. Boo hoo.
I have that written. It actually says boo hoo.
Boo hoo.
When Price says that, I was like, oh, I'm going to miss you guys.
I know. This is why we need a
Price.
CBS just needs to pick that up.
We do. We do.
It would be the best replacement for CSI.
Yes.
I really liked how it seems like they're just talking to Jack.
Because
we don't know what Will is doing, because last we saw him, he was colluding with the Red Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get that slow pan over to reveal Will in the room, which I thought was really cool.
The Great Red Dragon lives.
Yeah.
So he gets to sort of rescind his his earlier remark.
Ding dong.
Yes.
But I love how he's playing this. I love the way he's playing this. He's not,
he knows how stupid
Jack,
and insane this is.
I know where the Red Dragon is. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, I guess he's not dead. Who'd have thunk?
Who'd have thunk? Who knew?
Imagine that.
And then when he's out there talking to Jack, want to hear what the best bait would be?
Yes.
Hannibal. Would, that weird delivery.
Yes.
Hannibal would be the best bait.
Yeah.
So weird.
But I don't know. Maybe
great.
I'm wrong. I don't know.
It's like, what do you think, Jack?
What do you think, Jack? Yeah. Let's make this your idea.
And what Jack,
yes,
what Jack
exactly.
think, why in God's name would anyone want to meet Hannibal?
Yes, I loved that line.
To kill him, of course.
It is. It's so, like, I'm leading him on. You get it.
Yeah.
You know, no. Like, it's the innocent voice.
Right. Mm-hmm. When, and here Will talks about the Wendigo-like aspect of the dragon. If he kills Hannibal Lecter, he could engulf him. He could be, be stronger from Hannibal. But Will is even hedging his bets here with, I'm not even sure Hannibal would draw the dragon.
Exactly.
I don't know. It's not a bad idea.
It's a theory.
It just, couldn't hurt to try. Yeah.
But what do we got to lose?
And when they say take Hannibal into federal custody and fake an escape, it's just like, this is a terrible plan.
Yes.
Where is Katie Prunrell?
Because Jack is jacking up the law.
Everybody was looking for Katie Prunrell. Never came back.
Never came back. Where is she to say, hey, Jack, remember the last time you got fired?
It was for shit like this.
Yeah. we're sick of that around the bureau these days.
Exactly.
Well, there was nobody to check him.
No.
Before he wrecked himself.
Yes. And boy, he may not have wrecked himself, but man, some other vehicles and some...
Yes.
FBI agents got wrecked.
And while I'm thinking this is a terrible idea, for all involved, regardless of Will's motivations, this is a terrible idea. Gillian Anderson presents exactly my feels.
Your feels.
With her face.
It is. It's an amazing progression.
Perplexed.
Of expression.
That look on her face when we don't start on her, which is brilliant. We start on black and pan to her face.
It is a what the fuck.
In shock. And then up pouring a drink.
Yes.
Well
the implications of this are I need a freaking knock back.
Yeah.
A lot of booze.
Before I could even attempt to handle this, I need to be drunk.
And she's not talking the way she used to. She's not measured and calm.
No.
She is. What
she's
you propose is so thoughtless. Mm. She finds it difficult to imagine they even considered ramifications at all.
No human being would ever have conceived of this thought.
Yes. We do get perhaps the most Hannibal line of the episode, and by Hannibal I mean the television series Hannibal, the purple prose of Thomas Harris, with decisions are made of needed feelings. They're more often a lump than a sum. I don't believe that means anything.
No.
I feel like that occasionally this show does it where they just say things. It's like they're talking. They're not communicating. They're just talking.
Just it sounds pretty.
I hear lump in that text, I'm thinking like a bruise lump. Like, you get punched in the mouth, you get a lump.
I kind of liked that word had more exactly
lump
like
means
that.
Other things.
It was like an
some
impression.
Some doesn't mean
of,
much more than some.
Yeah.
But lump can be
exactly.
interpreted
it also
to be.
Sounds fleshy.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
sounds, yeah, exactly. It sounds like a piece or something torn or something. Yeah.
Something's been damaged.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's why
you
I like
your
the poetry
lumps.
Of that word. Yeah.
I did notice on the wall of Bedelia's room, there's a painting of water and cliffs that looks an awful lot like I found out this was shot in Newfoundland, and those cliffs from the end of the episode.
Ah.
It looks an awful lot like that. And this could be just me reading in, but I'm curious what our listeners think about that.
A little foreshadowing.
Bedelia makes no bones about it. However, they think they're going to manipulate this situation. Think again.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the same advice she gave to Jack before.
Yeah.
Like, the second you think you can figure out what Hannibal's doing, he's manipulated you into thinking that you know what he's doing. Mm.
And she has the who holds the devil, let him hold him well. He will hardly be caught a second time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's really interesting because, like Mizumono, this is an episode where we do get to consider what side Will is playing.
Yes.
The very convincing argument could be made that this entire thing was his plan. He fed the information to Dollarhyde of when they'd be transporting so that Dollarhyde took out the convoy and he and Will can, and Hannibal and Will can escape together. There is definitely that readability.
Yeah.
I really choose to believe Will is a good man.
I think that all this is planned, that he's playing both sides. He's playing all sides because really he just needs the shit to end with Hannibal.
But that didn't work out well for him the first time.
A lot of people keep doing things on this show that don't work out the first time.
And I'd be okay with that if not for the, let's say, dozen police officers that were brutally murdered in the middle of this episode.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just curious to see what'll happen if he plays both sides.
He may also...
I'll give a little bit of this side, I'll give a little bit of that side, and the stronger man will win.
I also wonder, in his desperation to save his family and be done,
yeah,
that he's ready to sacrifice
everyone.
Mm. And that's that part of him that's Hannibal. I think that's Will's becoming. Yeah.
As he says to Bedelia.
He just has a different objective than Hannibal does. Whereas Hannibal is all about having, being able to live his lifestyle and to do what he wants to do and think of people as, oh, well, if you're rude to me, I'm going to eat you. Where it's more self-centered and cold and for his own ends, Will becomes that person, but it's because he just wants to go back.
Yeah.
He wants everything to be the same with Molly, even though I think in his heart of hearts he knows it's not going to be. But at this point, if he could just play all of the pieces against each other and knock down all of them if he has to, he can somehow get to that house again with Molly, and everybody will be gone. There will be no Hannibal. There will be no Dollarhyde.
And no one will blame him.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. He can go sit on his front porch and
fix
everybody
boat will, motors and, in Canada.
And everybody leave him the fuck alone.
Then Will leaves with a mic drop here too. Yeah. I'd pack my bags if I were you, Bedelia. Meat is back on the menu.
I loved that line.
You get the ready or not, here he comes.
And the most apt summation of Will Graham is Bedelia's, "You righteous, wretched, twitchy little man."
Yes. I love that she used twitchy.
Twitchy little man. Little man,
little
too.
Man. But,
oh, it's just...
Another dig there.
Jillian is so good. So good.
She's so... All of her emotions are out on her sleeve.
Yeah.
At this moment. She's angry. She's terrified. You know, she's bewildered, and it is. It's like that whole everything which she's saying there about Will seems to encompass all of those mixed feelings that she has inside, and how terrified she is, and a lot of like, I had this figured out, you son of a bitch.
I even made a lecture career out of this.
My God.
Why don't you go back and teach?
I've been booked through the next 3 years, and you're gonna screw this up for me.
So in case we didn't get to enjoy it enough in the last episode, Chilton on fire.
Yeah.
Here it is again, this time in reverse, from other angles that are, if possible, more horrifying.
Oh, it is. It is. I didn't think that Chilton could be more frightening. Chilton on fire in reverse?
In reverse.
In
the gas goes back into the can. The flames go out around the gaping maw of Frederick Chilton.
He's just terrifying.
And then, I think to please Ophelia.
A little bit.
We get him in the oxygen chamber.
Yes.
Because he shouldn't just be soaking in a bath going, hey guys, what's up? Let's shake hands and get your germs all over me. You should
just
not.
Just rub some into my face. Yeah.
When you lose the most important organ of your body, which is your skin, you do not let random people walk in the room.
Yeah, it is a little odd. He looks a little bit more like the burnt up dude in the waiting room in Beetlejuice. than actually
the cigarette.
The cigarette guy. Yeah, the cigarette guy who's tapping his foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than
get a light.
Yeah, looking like someone who is like fighting for their lives.
Yeah.
Their life, you know, and having to be protected and isolated, because it's true. I mean, that's what I thought too. I'm like, wait, all that skin is not supposed to be exposed.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know.
And here he's been getting skin grafts, which look like they're taking. Mm-hmm. So we get a perhaps a glimpse of the type of horrific Frederick Chilton we would get in a season 4 or a film.
Oh, yeah. Even more horrifying
than Mason Verger. And, you know, because, like, I was disappointed mildly that they didn't go all the way with Mason Verger, you know, like
he's supposed to look like
one eye that's never closing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Mason really just he concentrated on the lower face. But Chilton from head to foot is horrible.
Oh, yeah. God, yes. And even having to see him in the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
It was so horrifying. What amazing makeup.
Well, yes, the lips. Yes. The lack of lips, but the stumps of lips,
the pulled back, the exposed.
It was
gums.
Stunning because they moved like they were his lips, like he was trying to use his lips. And I've never seen makeup do that because that is makeup that is not attached to him. That's so the performance from Marlo Esparza and very weak in it, and almost like. I don't even know what to say to you people anymore. Right. Look what you did to me, assholes.
Done.
And the way he addresses Alana when she comes in, your face did not change at all when you first looked at me. Yeah. Shock in seeing me is usually delayed.
Yeah. I love that line. That shock in seeing me is usually delayed. And it is, it's like, you know, that whole thing of you have changed in a way where this doesn't bother you.
Yeah.
You, this monster that you've become in the process of all of this happening. What I find fascinating too, when she enters in this scene, is we're back to old Alana colors.
Mm.
That she had been through a good majority of this season, very stark. She's been a lot of black and white. All of her, sort of like the giraffe or, the crosshatch, designs that were all over her wrap dresses for the first season. That signature Alana look with the reds and the deep blues. She had a lot of like burgundies and dark reds, and a lot of that was gone. And, we had mentioned that Margot seemed to be taking on a lot of that color and that pattern. And during the course of time, it seemed like Alana was taking on a lot of Hannibal colors.
Yeah.
The way her suits looked and things
Alana's
like that.
Alana's pants later match Hannibal's suit from the dream, the memory palace.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. She does. She has a window pane suit.
Yeah. And we get Chilton kind of pointing this out.
Yes, that
are you comfortable?
How comfortable are you in Hannibal's skin? Because Chilton would love some grafts from Hannibal.
Oh
yes.
To be able to wear that skin.
You could work that too when he's giving interviews about his book.
His comments when Alana says, I wanted to see for myself what Hannibal is capable of. And Chilton just goes, what Hannibal is capable of, what Will Graham is capable of,
what you are capable of.
And too bad there wasn't enough rope to hang yourself with just to hang me.
I know. Poor Chilton.
Poor Chilton indeed.
I thought I was sitting at the cool table. And then you guys set me up so I got beaten up out in the outside the lunchroom.
Or they poured the blood on my head.
Right. Exactly.
I thought when Alana went in to present the deal to Hannibal, because Hannibal would just mock and be shitty to Jack.
Yeah.
Something he admits. It felt very similar to the Plum Island deal from Silence of the Lambs. You know, there's deal. So here's what's going to happen. And if he goes along with everything, he gets his books back, he gets his all his
toilet.
Privileges back. Presumably, he's allowed to cook again, which again,
or
no
a
one,
toilet.
They never mention it. Yeah, he doesn't have to wear his dignity pants anymore. And this is where Hannibal gets a line that it came from a letter to Will, I think, in the book. Any rational society would either kill me or give me my books.
I think that is the letter.
I think that's from the letter at the end of Red Dragon.
Yeah. I think I think it's also the same letter where he asks about
the scars.
The face.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hope he's not too ugly.
Yeah.
And they actually use that as dialogue.
As Chilton, do please tell Frederick, if you see him, that I wish him a speedy convalescence and hope he's not too ugly.
Yes.
The question of trusting people with the well-being, does Alana trust Will with Hannibal's well-being? Does Alana trust Hannibal with Will's well-being? And Hannibal just right out says, I might escape in earnest and come and kill you.
Mm-hmm. Because I keep my promises.
Yeah, and here's this is the most powerful Hannibal has been behind that plexiglass. When he says, you died in my kitchen, Alana, when you chose to be brave. Every moment since is borrowed. Your wife, your child, they belong to me.
It's so.
You made a bargain for Will's life, and then I spun you gold.
Yes.
Man.
What an amazingly great line.
Mm-hmm. And just, that's a huge power play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, completely.
And is enough to have Alana and Margot and the Verger baby.
Yes.
Get on a helicopter and get the fuck away from Muskrat Farms there.
They do. They're leaving town.
I like the deal with the devil connotation wrapped in with the Rumpelstiltskin folklore.
I like the Rumpelstiltskin thing.
Yeah. Because you get the every moment it's borrowed. Like you struck up a deal.
Yeah.
Now it's time to pay, basically.
And that's such a mythological thing from all that old folklore is you can have what you want now.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give it to you and you will benefit, which she has.
And it is also the deal.
But at some time, it's time to pay.
I'm going to come and collect. Yeah. And that's...
It's collection time.
I'm surprised. Yes. Are you too surprised that we didn't see the collection of this debt? With all that they've made of it this season?
No, he was too busy. He's too busy.
He was very busy.
There wasn't enough time.
With his primary. With his main boy.
But
his main boy.
But I feel like if we're going to leave things open-ended, that maybe that's what he's on his agenda.
I think the implication...
You've got Bedelia leg, so...
Well, yes. The implication, I feel like, is very similar to the end of Silence of the Lambs and the I'm having an old friend for dinner with Chilton. And thankfully, they didn't feel the need to say having a friend for dinner again. On this series because... Mm-hmm. I would have been done. It would have been over. That was too many.
Too many times.
But I was thrilled to see Catherine Isabel again.
Oh.
Even though her name in the credits made me think something else totally was going to happen. Made me think that our final climax was going to be at Muskrat Farms.
Not just her walking out of the house with the Verger baby.
Right. With the little Verger boy.
Exactly.
The heir.
Yeah, he's not a baby anymore.
He's the heir to the Verger fortune.
He's a little boy. And Alana, again, in very early Alana-style clothes when she exits. I noticed that again.
Looking back at the estate, like, wistfully, while Margot is just like, get the fuck in the helicopter.
Get in the chopper. Yeah. Get in the chopper.
Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper.
Oh, boy.
Corhagen.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Back to Hannibal.
Yeah, anyway.
the sequence where they make their deal with the devil, where it's Jack and Alana and Will in Jack's office in the dark drinking.
Yes.
This is like a last day before the war thing. I mean, this is seriously, they all recognize the gravity of what they're about
to
do. They're
getting ready to go over the top tomorrow. Yeah. So we are going to have a very serious discussion.
Hannibal's only request is that Will come and say, please.
Yep.
Will
has to say it.
That actually made me chuckle.
And Will's like, I'll say pretty please. I don't give a fuck. What, does he think he's in charge?
Exactly. It means nothing.
And Hannibal would think that that's a come groveling back to me. And he does.
Mm-hmm.
Because he makes it clear that that's the, when you come back, oh, by the way.
I love the way when he does have to say please.
Yeah.
He really is sort of like.
Please, Hannibal, you're our best shot.
Yeah. You're our only hope.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Exactly. But he says it with a little bit of edge to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I said your words. You're like, you, okay, you want
maybe
to
not every single syllable, no.
No.
But before we get there.
So many.
Yeah, we're all over the place with that. Is it interesting that Will says, let them think I helped Hannibal escape? Does that tip things into the Will is plotting the escape? Not just the escape to let Dollar-Eyed kill him, or not just the escape to let the FBI kill him, but is that the tip to say, oh, yeah, it's going to look like I helped him escape, but I didn't because I'm on your side, but it's going to look like I did. Will's planning that.
Exactly. That kind of is how I thought he was playing that.
Yeah.
Was that, well, if I say, oh, it's okay if it looks that way.
Right.
It's almost like saying, well, that wasn't what I planned, but hey, if that's got to happen to make this happen, then I can live with it. And it does, it sort of deflects the focus on him.
Right.
That, well, if I say I understand that this is going to happen, that it sounds like this is not what I meant for it to happen.
Exactly, yeah. So then the plan is the dragon comes, the FBI kills Dollar-Eyed, and then Hannibal. And give the devil his due,
yes.
So unlike before, Jack is not interested in letting Hannibal walk away from this fight. Neither is Will, it seems. Mm. But I guess it's up for interpretation.
Yeah. I think they've been so beaten through this experience. They've definitely gotten to that point where it's just like, oh, fuck it, just kill him. Can we just be over? Oh, can we be done? Can we just be done? I don't want to see this man. I don't have another conversation with him.
And we're back at the Norman Chapel when Will goes to say pretty please to Hannibal. Mm. And Hannibal this time is standing at the altar, facing the altar. I love when he said, when he talks about the rejection, the when Will walked out last time, I believe that's what they call a mic drop.
Yes.
You dropped the mic and now you are here to pick it back up again.
There is nothing more bizarre than hearing Mass with his Danish accent.
Say mic drop.
I believe that is what they call a mic drop. Yes.
I thought the personal ads and the mail drop thing was a nice echo to Red Dragon.
Oh, yeah. Because I like that they put that in, too, because that was such a big
part. Honestly, there's endless conversations about mail drops and personal ads.
Throughout all the books, it's kind of like a really big thing.
But it sounds weak to you even as you say it.
Oh, Hannibal knows. He knows.
And I was surprised that we went so quickly out to this plan.
Oh, the
van's
convoy.
Driving. Hannibal's in the cage.
It does happen pretty quickly, doesn't it? Where suddenly they don't show any setup. They don't show.
Yeah.
It's just out. And you would think, but I guess there probably isn't enough time. But often people love milking the whole putting Hannibal.
Into the restraints
and wheeling him in, and there's always some iconic shot of like.
Instead, we get the iconic shot of him removing the restraints, exactly. As the other cop car comes up, the dragon percussion was building the doom, 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 doom,
and we also get the bull roar.
Yeah,
we did. Yeah,
so that was very distinct.
We all knew very what distinct. Was happening before it happened. When that car came up, and I heard everything, I was like, "Oh, here we go."
And what about that? After the crash, there's that split-second shot of Dollar-Eyed turning and looking from another scene, and then a shot of Will's eye, and that's where we hear the bull roar. It's a really interesting confluence. I would be able to make the argument, or I would believe the argument, that the fact that Will hears the bull roar, it means Hannibal is manipulating this, not Will. This is not his plan. Mm-hmm. This is not his design.
Exactly. I think that the
he was still on board with the escape being fake.
Yes. But now
Dollar-Eyed killed all the cops and drove away.
He's amazingly badass.
Brian Fuller tweeted during this scene that he did have military training, which I believe is something that was from the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. But I know I was talking to Kate Kulczyk, our friend from This Is Our Design. After we watched it, she was like, should I watch it? And so I queued it up and we watched it at the same time.
Oh,
and
wow.
She just started firing things at me. And this was the question is, how is he so good at this? And why does nobody care that all these cops are dying?
Oh, why does... I think no one has a moment to process
my thought.
Usually when stuff like this is happening, even though they're professionals, if you're not expecting it, especially when you think, okay, I'm all over this, when shit goes wrong, sometimes human beings often can't function and switch gears
right
that quickly. You know, they're trying to figure it. I think it happens also in a very short period of time.
It does. This is a very quick moment.
Yeah, and he dispatches everybody because they're not expecting it.
Right.
And I wish I could remember Dollaride's past completely. I only remember his childhood, but I don't remember because when I reread it, I started at sort of three quarters of the way through because I wanted to just focus on the parts that we were specifically dealing with at the end of this episode. So I didn't go back and read all the grandma stuff and his background and before he started on Gateway. But even if...
when he chose to reflect, which was seldom, he had many satisfactory memories. They were of his military service.
There we go. So it is there in the background. And although, you know, we don't get to share that on a TV show that doesn't have time.
Right.
But if you don't know that, another way that you can kind of... write it off is that this was a guy with a lot of time on his hands
mm-hmm.
and a lot of plans.
And all he did was hone his body.
Yes. So it may have been where he was not only honing his body, but honing his skills. And he may have gone to a range
right.
and practiced and made sure that if he ever had to engage the law while he was during his becoming, that he could protect the families that he was changing or protect himself during this process of the becoming. So even though it's already supported by his past in the book, there's a myriad of ways for him to be this good at it. It's just we don't get to see it. And sometimes when that happens on TV, we get frustrated when we're not given the answer. But it's really cool and badass when he's out there and he's doing that single shot.
It is.
He's taking everybody out and the police cars are going all over the place and we get a massive, you know, crash with the transport vehicle and you're like, wow, everyone gets like really just tossed around. Mm-hmm. And then Hannibal walks out like, yeah, whatever.
Well, and Hannibal is in such a cheery mood here.
Yes.
when he walks out and he's like, you know, Will, you worry too much. You'd be more comfortable if you'd relax with yourself. And I loved when he dumped the cop out of the car, got in and drove around to pick up Will, opened that door and shoved the cop out of that side.
Yeah.
Going my way.
Exactly.
It was so cheery.
It is.
Contrasted by when Jack arrives at the scene at night being like, I'm so fired.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's like, okay. I guess early retirement's about all I've got going for me right now.
We have left the literal Baltimore area and gone to the world of imagination where
like
these cliffs are on the Atlantic Ocean in the United States here, that it's a stunning location.
Yes, but
just
I don't think
gorgeous.
That can physically exist in Baltimore.
No.
I've spent time in Baltimore. I know what it looks like. But then I also know it doesn't snow like
in
that.
In fairness,
Baltimore,
we don't know where they're going.
Yeah. I've read somewhere that it's actually Hannibal's, they said it was Hannibal's cliffside home.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I didn't realize that was cliffside.
Well, no, it's his other house.
His other
it's
house.
His murder house. It's his
safe house.
It's his.
Well, it's where he brought
Abigail. Mary Lass. Yeah. So it's his reprogramming house. It's where he goes to make you into little Hannibal babies.
Oh, it's Camp Hannibal.
Camp Hannibal.
Camp Hannibal. Campable.
Campable.
Camp Hannibal. Camp Hannibal. Yeah. Still sounds like I'm saying Camp Hannibal. there was a little bit of on-the-nose dialogue here when he says, and now you're here with me, and the bluff is still eroding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, he prefaces that with the whole where he talks about how, you know, when I first came here,
there was more land.
There was more land, mm-hmm. and then when I was here with Miriam last, there was less land. And when I was here with Abigail, he sort of gives this impression that over time, this land has eroded, and that's kind of what happens with his relationships
with the ratings on a certain series.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. They're slowly eroding, and I think he realizes that there really is no hope for this.
Yeah.
He's going to have one last-ditch effort. It's basically, okay, I see there's, you know, we don't have a long haul here.
Well, what about him calling Will's bluff?
What do you
mean? I read that as he's basically telling Will, I know what you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And he just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's saying, is that what you think is going on between us.
Yeah.
Is I realize it's not there because I know what you're doing.
And he says, you and I stand here above the roaring Atlantic, and soon all of this will be lost to the sea.
To the sea. Ooh, foreshadowing.
When we come back from that commercial and we do that push in over the water and we see just their house on the cliff. So gorgeous.
Yeah, I want to live there.
And there's that fancy new version of Goldberg Variations, another variation, as it were.
Another variation.
A variation that made it hard to recognize as Goldberg Variations, I thought. This sequence is wonderful because it's everything we love about this series.
Oh, yes.
The way they talk to each other, the way they're open with each other. Was it surprising when you heard from him? Mm. Yes and no. Do you intend to watch him kill me?
Yeah. Mm.
I intend to watch him change you.
Yes.
And Hannibal's very frank and very insightful realization that his compassion for Will is inconvenient to him.
Yeah.
Because it would make so much more sense to just gut Will, throw him off the cliff, and be done with this.
It would have been much more helpful to him if he had gutted Will and eaten him, I don't know, two seasons ago?
Instead of framing him for murder. Yeah.
Right, right.
But Will points out, rightfully, if you are partial to beef products, it's inconvenient to be compassionate toward a cow.
Very true. And that also draws back to the whole idea of, you know, not being able to eat, not having eaten well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's that I am basically just as much cattle as all the other people that you see as cattle, but you've become, because of your compassion.
And Hannibal's like, no, man, you're Kobe.
He's Wagyu beef.
Yeah, you're
He's
the
a
best.
Special fancy kind.
Grass fed. Come on.
All organic. No hormones.
But that applies that he's going to eat him at some point.
I think he still wants to.
Well,
I mean, if you're... Okay, so if you're Hannibal Lecter, is there anyone in your life that you don't vaguely want to eat?
Well, he probably thinks about it all the time, but I think it's not something that... But then he wouldn't get to see what's going on with Will.
A little, maybe. No, I see it like, remember that scene in Fight Club where it's cataloging all the stuff? You know, you see the names of the items in the possessions. I see Hannibal walking up to someone and shaking their hand and just rump roast. And just, he is cataloging.
Like the old cartoons where you see the dotted outlines.
This is where I would eat. This is USDA Prime Will Graham.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe so.
Maybe not, but I love the bit of business where Hannibal is cleaning the wine glasses because it's clear he hasn't been here in a while, so the wine glasses would be dusty. Mm-hmm. And the way he opens the wine and smells the cork, I mean, it's pure vintage Hannibal here.
Oh, completely. And it's nice to get to see it. It is sort of like a nice little step back in time because, man, do we miss the cooking segments or what?
Yeah.
Yes. All the food porn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's been hard not to have that.
It's been really hard not to have that. So even though we didn't really get that here, we still got to experience that part of Hannibal that we love.
Yeah.
And that's his appreciation.
The aperitif here.
Exactly. For every bit of everything that he ingests and the way he takes the time to sniff the cork.
And puts it right up there. That's fantastic.
Puts it right up,
right
in,
up in there. He's not being shy. He knows how to smell the cork. And when he hands the wine to Will and he says, save yourself, kill them all.
Yeah.
He's giving Will the permission. Basically, this is like the final test.
Mm-hmm.
Will, if this is what you need, do it. If this is how you can be whole,
do it.
Do it. But Will is lost. You know, he doesn't know if he can save himself anymore, but has come to the acceptance of, I guess that's it. I guess that's fine. Do you think he knows here that he's going to try to kill Hannibal? Or is he actually actively waiting for the dragon to do it for him so he doesn't have to?
I think at this point he thinks it's the dragon.
I think he might be waiting for the dragon at this point.
Yeah. I think there's not, because it's just them,
mm-hmm.
and despite all that's happened, I think he's even more convinced because the dragon has come.
I'm not sure Will could do it.
He might be
incapable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think he is hoping that someone else will do the dirty deed for him.
Then he never has to answer that question, can I or can't I?
And all he has to do is say, hey, I'm drinking wine, man. Yeah. I can't stop him. I can't stop the dragon. I'm drinking the wine.
What am I supposed to do?
Wait, no, stop.
Yeah, no.
Wait, police.
Police. Murder.
Hannibal says, no greater love hath man than to lay down his life for a friend. Which could apply to both of them.
It could, yeah.
I think this is a worthy argument, and I don't know that I can actively say this is what I think is going on, but I do feel like this is the closest to compassionate Hannibal we have ever seen. This is the closest to a Hannibal who would allow himself to be killed by Will or killed by the dragon if it would save Will. What do you think of that? I'm curious.
There's a part of me, though, that thinks that he's not actually feeling like he's sacrificing himself for anyone. I think that there's a place in his mind that thinks that as much as I find these people interesting, if I have to, I will be the only person who walks out of here alive. Mm. I think there's a bit of that still there. I don't think he's ready to sacrifice at that point. I think he thinks he's that damn good. That he won't have to.
Sure. What do you think?
I tend to agree with that assessment that he just doesn't think he'll ever have to face that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even on his radar.
So Hannibal has smartest man in the room syndrome.
Yeah.
He's often the smartest man in the room.
Well, I mean, he's often said that specifically, like when he talks about the visitors that he gets, the pencil lickers.
The pencil lickers.
I mean, there is no one that he sees as an equal except Will.
Except perhaps Will.
Which is, I mean, that's what we've been saying right along, is that he has no equal except maybe Will.
Do you think it's possible he sees Will as a legacy?
That he wants to leave that behind.
He knew without a doubt that they were coming for him in Italy. He resigned himself to that being the end of Hannibal Lecter outside of custody. And I mean, I don't know that I thought this while watching it, but I'm thinking more and more that he sees if he can change Will, if he can guide Will to his becoming. Hannibal Lecter can fall away. The chrysalis can fall away. And the butterfly that is this monster can emerge.
I'm not sure if he feels that Will's fully become what he needs to become.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Is he like Hannibal's key to retirement?
Sort of.
When I unleash Will.
And well, if Will's going to do the same good work that Hannibal has been doing.
Is he the Dread Pirate Roberts?
He is the Dread Pirate Roberts. That's what I've been saying all this time. I just didn't realize it until we got all the way around. As Goldberg ends, they talk about how Dolerite is watching them now.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
just
yes.
The final notes of the Goldberg variations come. and Hannibal is shot through.
Yeah.
Shocking. I was shocked.
Oh, yes. I was not expecting that.
No.
And it's spectacular because he's shot through and it goes through the wine bottle.
And the wine bottle shatters on the floor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they have a beautiful slow motion shattering.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because I noticed that when they would do the reverse on Will, I was like, the eye line's not matching up. And then when he said that, I was like, oh, he's not watching
Hannibal.
Yeah,
Dollar Eye's in the background. Yeah.
He was noticing that Dollar Eye was in the background. So it's really interesting that he's having a conversation.
See a peek of him. Yeah. He's trying. It's all black. He's just barely visible.
Yeah, he's trying not to give it away. He's not trying to go, hey, look.
Yeah. Well, Hannibal's.
Guess
Hannibal's
who's come
like,
for dinner?
I can smell him through dinner. The glass. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
It's like, yeah, he reeks. He smells like a dragon. I mean, have you ever smelled a dragon?
Exactly. All that brimstone and crap. It's nasty. It's worse
terrible
than,
breath.
It's worse than your
shit everywhere.
Your aftershave.
It's worse than your aftershave. Yeah. Exactly.
I can even smell it over your aftershave.
Your aftershave. But it is. It's amazing.
I felt like it was a little bit of an homage to Manhunter also, because it's the reversal. At the end of Manhunter, Will Graham comes diving through a window to save the day in glorious fashion. It's a very different story we're watching here.
Oh, yes.
Clearly. Dollar Eye repeats his line, don't run. I'll catch you. And it's in that same really calm. But I loved Will. This moment, Hugh Dancy, he's like, I'm not running anywhere. I'm just going to have a little of my wine.
Yeah. Does it look like I'm running?
You go and do what you got to do.
I'm going to sit back and watch the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
The low shots in this scene were very, I felt Orson Welles here. These low shots looking up at that ceiling where Will is there. I mean, this scene is Lecter's point of view as he feels things are spiraling a little bit out of his control. I think here Hannibal realizes, okay, if Will actually is interested in letting me die, this could be it.
Yeah.
He's remarkably calm.
Yeah.
He's just standing there with the wine, like ready to just drink and watch me die.
Yeah. And so he tries to talk his way out of it with, I'm so happy you chose life, Francis. Suicide is the enemy.
Yes.
You were seized by a fantasy world with the brilliance and freshness and immediacy of childhood. It took you a step beyond alone.
Yes.
Dollarite is not interested in that kind of bullshit,
though. Backpedaling. Yeah. No. Yes.
Because he's just totally, I'm going to film your death.
Yeah. Exactly. Can you shut up? Because I'm trying to set up a camera here.
And he says, stay your mouth with the strength of the dragon.
Yes.
Like, shut up. Yeah.
Shush.
But Hannibal can't even leave that. It is glorious and rather disconcerting of an idea.
Yeah. And that whole process of him,
he pulls out the little tiny 8 millimeter camera.
It's creepy the way he says it. And then he brings out the camera and he set
on his little tiny tripod in the pool of blood that's already on the floor.
It's very disturbing in the calmness in which he does it. While Hannibal's lying there, bleeding. And it's like, yeah, whatever, dude. Just, you can keep talking your talk, but I'm doing my thing here.
I got something going on.
And I'm going to watch, I'm going to film you.
And he's looking forward to watching the film because that will be wonderful, but not as wonderful as the act
itself.
Right, that's what he
said. Nothing will ever be as magnificent as watching you die right here in front of you, in front of me.
Change. He's going to change him. So this is interesting. So Dollar Eyed snaps his knife open immediately. Okay. Hannibal sees it, looks to Will. Will sees to Hannibal.
That was very cop show.
Yeah.
You got me?
Yeah.
I got you. Like that look.
It's like, shoot him. Shoot him now.
Yeah.
Shoot him now.
You see what's going on? You with me? You with me? Yeah, I'm with you. It was very much one of those like a Western almost where they made that eye contact where it's like, you get me? I got you.
And when Will goes for his gun, Dollarite is there so quickly.
Oh yeah.
To stab him in the face.
In the face.
Yep.
Which I was thrilled to see this. And a lot of of fans will complain about this, but this is right from the book.
Yes.
Will gets stabbed in the face. This is how Will leaves Red Dragon, is horribly mutilated and disfigured because the dragon stabbed him in the face.
Yes.
And picks him up and throws him out to the patio. This is, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah. But it's stunning visually.
And I got the feeling that the dragon was furious that Will would attempt to interfere.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Is that I think he really thought that there was an understanding between him and Will.
Yeah, I'm going to kill this guy and you're going to stay there.
Yeah, because you're like cool with this, right? And then, and for all we know, he may have seen their locking of eyes.
Yes.
In a way in which it was like, it's kind of like, you know, where you know, like those 80s movies where they always get like the cool guy to like the nerdy girl and she thinks that the cool guy is all into her. And then there's that realization that no, they had just like had a bet that they would do this, you know, make her feel cool, and then he was going to dump her.
Did she have paint covered overalls at some point?
I've seen
that movie.
Oh, exactly. With Bobby socks with flats.
Yeah, yeah.
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 Exactly.
I'm with you.
And one of those little tiny hats, almost Dixie's Midnight Runner-esque. But it was sort of in that moment of, oh no, you're not in this with me.
Yeah, I thought we were all on the same page.
I thought we were all on the same page, and I think that he caught that.
Yeah.
In that moment, and knew that he was
like,
going to be betrayed.
Wait a minute, somebody's playing a trick on me.
It's bad enough you betrayed me. Everyone's betrayed me.
How badass is it when Will pulls the knife out of his face
and stabs Dalaran with it?
It's like, I am done with you crazy sons of bitches.
Yeah.
But a bit out of his face and stabs him. And then Dalaran pulls it out of his, I don't know, I couldn't
leg,
really tell, leg, thigh maybe, and then right into Will's shoulder.
Yes.
But then, leave my little graham cracker alone.
Hannibal
bolts
in.
Out, leaps on the Dalaran. This was the best moment of the dragon in the entire series, I think, when Dalaran throws him off and the wings come out.
Is this where he...
where Hannibal is in the woodpile.
Oh, and then we see he knocks over the axe.
Yeah.
And that's what's like, oh, okay.
I guess an axe is going to come into play here.
And it was one of those moments where I was like, oh, did we... We couldn't just use the axe and just assume that was just something out on the porch because there's a wood pile there. You had to add an extra shot that was knocking into the wood pile.
Hey,
and we
at least
the
they
axe.
Didn't have Hannibal chopping wood during their conversation on the bluff earlier.
So we all know this axe is here.
It's like, look, there's an axe.
Yes.
I wonder if that will come in handy later.
Exactly.
This is so animalistic here. Mm-hmm. These three men here. Will pulls the knife out of his shoulder.
Yes.
Again, taking the knife out, he's going to put it in someone else. While Dolorite is choking the hell out of Hannibal.
Oh, yeah.
Will stabs Dolorite twice in the back, just really just going one and two.
Brutal.
Let's talk about the song.
Oh, my gothy heart was so happy.
I didn't know how to feel because it just went into like super sexed up. Like, what?
That is true.
That is a good sex playlist song.
I'm like, oh, it is. It's
we're
very
stabbing,
sexy.
We're fighting, we're choking, we're bleeding, and wait, what am I listening to?
It was interesting because while we were watching it, There was a lot of brutality going on.
This is the kind of song that should have been playing with Reba and the Dragon.
Yes.
This is what I'm talking
and
about.
And then there's a long intro to this song.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
where it's just instrumental instrumental type that we have not heard on this show before.
At all.
Yep.
And then we get a little slow motion-y.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And dark. And it was, we're watching this, and I had
it's a
moment
dance.
Where I was
dancing.
Watching it. Where I probably had a very quizzical expression on my face. Because I was like, It did. It seemed like, wow, what is going on? And then I hear next to me, did this get sexy all of a sudden?
Like, yeah.
And I realized Ophelia just nailed it right on that. That's what why I was like, I liked it, but I was disturbed and I wasn't sure. Like, and that's what it was. The beginning of this movie was not only dark and ethereal, but very sexy.
Well, and that's what has been said, is this is the consummation of their relationship. Hannibal and Will are not going to have sex. This is what they do together.
They kill. Exactly. Yeah. And it seems like it's pretty satisfying.
It is. Yeah. So tell us about this artist. I had never heard of her before.
Oh my God, I can't
really
believe never heard of her.
Oh my.
Wow. Mind blown.
Well,
okay.
Tell our listeners who also may have never heard of her before. And please, while you're doing that, let them know it's okay to have never heard of her before.
It's
now
okay.
They know.
Oh, okay. That's true. Ophelia and I
come from a different background.
We do. We're gothy and punk and alt.
I'm what they call white bread.
I see.
Okay.
You're very very main, but not sort
mainstream
of mainstream
pop.
More mainstream, yeah.
More mainstream. More mainstream, yeah. So basically, it's a song by Susie Sue. But what was amazing about it is I've been a Susie Sue fan, or Susie and the Banshees fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's word.
Since Join Hands, since that was released, and I'm giving away my age because it's a really
no you're not because you're not giving a year I have
yeah
no
you
idea.
Still have it
what is this 80s 90s new 80s. Millennium
early
80s 80,
yeah
early
80s early 80s yeah. Okay. They've been around since the late 70s in the UK and they were like punk and then got into the goth movement.
Did you say like the female version of The Cure?
Kind of like that
give you a something to go off of, because I'm sure you've heard of The Cure.
I have heard of The Cure. Thank you.
They came out around. They evolved at the same time.
I am aware of a band called The Cure, and I am aware that they have sang songs.
Okay.
Then we have a basis time frame now.
Lot of See and the Banshees' earlier stuff is more punk.
Okay.
Like if you listen to Join Hands, it's a little harder. They do a 15-minute long version of the Lord's Prayer. That is mind blowing. It's like loud and punk. She's singing the words in this sort of atonal. She's got a beautiful voice.
Mm-hmm.
But her look was one of the icons of the early Gothic movement.
Yes.
She had a very Egyptian look about her. Her eye makeup was inspired by Egyptian eye makeup, and she had this extremely amazing bone structure, and she had the pale white skin and the shock of hair, and every goth kid wanted to be her when they grew up.
Maybe not only goth girls, but
I mean, I did my makeup like her in high school because I wanted to look, but the music was amazing and they did great stuff. And they started to reach a peak where they were almost mainstream and popular when Kiss Them For Me came out, sort of after, I'm trying to remember the album with the bell jar on it. I've had too much wine and I can't remember the name of the album, but there's an album that came out that started to gain them more mainstream popularity. And then they have been actually on other movies and things like that. Their music is, and then about 11 years ago, there was a big breakup with the band. She did some work like around that time. And cause I remember I started following her on Facebook cause I was hoping to hear more stuff from them, that maybe she would do other things. And really for about the past, I'd say 8 years or so.
Just hasn't.
Nothing.
Just hasn't.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, you know, it happens, I guess, you know.
People.
So then, from what I've heard, Brian Reitzel heard from her that she was a fan of the show.
Yeah. And also Brian Reitzel knew that Brian Fuller was a huge fan
of
Susie. And I love when I read about it because he was like, oh, I went to her concerts. And I was like, Brian Fuller's a goth. He's a goth.
He's one of us.
Because, oh, yeah, Susie's just amazing in concert.
This conversation is going to cross over to the Kinky Geeks.
It might.
Almost. Yeah, it this might. Does. Yeah. This is in the realm of the Kinky Geeks. But that was the catalyst of this, is that Reitzel knew that Brian was a huge fan and mm-hmm. had gone way back. And then I guess somewhere had also found out that she was a fan of the show and actually approached her to write something new. And it was actually not originally going to be over the finale. And through talking, she basically explained that she hasn't been inspired to write anything mm-hmm. for a number of years. So that's why there hasn't been anything new. But she loves the show so much.
She was inspired by Hannibal.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing is that Steve Severin came back. And what's also even more amazing for the truly old goth that I am is they got Mark Allman involved. Mark Allman, if you are familiar with the song Tainted Love.
I am. That I know, yes.
Exactly.
You know that song too.
So that was when he was in the band and he did that. But he's had a solo career mm-hmm. Since then for quite a long time. I have a bunch of his solo albums. And so I actually remember when they did the premiere in the UK, because I follow Susie Sue and Mark Allman, they posted a picture and I saw all three of them together. And I was like, how awesome that they're fans and they went to the premiere together.
never expecting
that they were writing music.
Exactly. I had no idea that that was what was going on, but they collaborated on the song Love Crimes. And when Brian Fuller heard it, he was like, this is not only going to be part of the show, but this needs
this
to be.
This is how we end the show.
Yeah. This is what we end on.
Exactly.
And it is really a perfect, you know, it's perfect in a way you never would have expected.
Oh, yeah.
Because this show has never done anything close to that tonally. And then to have that come out and be, you have that moment of discord where it's just like, a song?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But then you're with it, and especially so as this song starts, when Hannibal jumps on Dolaride's back and Will charges him, and Will has that moment where he's just breathing and bleeding, he's on his, you know, in the crouch position, and he rushes him and guts him.
Yep.
Yes.
And then Hannibal
takes up.
Yeah.
Big old
like the big apex predator his, he
yep.
is,
mm-hmm. out of the
yeah
well,
lunges
quite
in
the jugular,
and
but
tears out the
he
throat.
Tears out
yeah,
the throat.
Tears out the throat.
When Dolaride goes to his knees and the wings come out, did you see the tail in the background? I noticed
no.
that on the second viewing.
Oh no, I
you
missed see, that.
The tail is sort of like flopping around,
twisting,
spasming, like dying. That again in darkness. Yes, use CGI in darkness.
Every bit of what is in this finale.
And I love that they are gone when Dolaride falls over. It's like they're there because that's the moment that Dolaride sees what he is. But then they're gone because they're not there.
Yeah.
They never were there. And that is a wonderful thing.
The beautiful imagery of his blood.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just coming out and becoming
the wing. Patterns.
And we get multiple alternative wings for him here.
Then we get the next scene where
when the scrapbook is burning.
Yes.
And then he's in front of the painting and the fire and film. It's almost biblical icon the
oh,
way
yeah.
that shot where the
now,
tendrils
did you guys
of
see
the film
flame reflected in mirrors. Because that's kind of what I saw, like the way that pattern
the,
was.
The back and
the
forth.
Back forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just all beautiful.
Oh, just amazing.
And it's actually also kind of, you know, you feel bad for Dolaride, but he got his becoming.
Yeah.
In the end, he became the dragon. He was the dragon. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't powerful enough to take on Hannibal Lecter, but he was the dragon.
Yeah.
Will is broken.
Oh yeah.
Like damaged here.
Mm-hmm.
And when he reaches out and says, it really does look
black
in the moonlight.
The moonlight.
And he reaches for Lecter. I love that. And Hannibal helps him up.
Mm-hmm.
and sort of grabs on to his shirt to hold him there.
I think that is such it's one of my favorite moments at the end.
Yeah.
Because they come and they have sort of the interesting background that looks like almost like a Turner painting.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like this chiaroscuro sunset that's going on behind them. And there's something so sort of amazingly powerful and meaningful about the way Will's fingers grasp Hannibal's sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets multiple here, and I think that's the moment where he knows this is it.
Yeah. He's made a decision.
Either I kill him now,
yeah,
or I'm done and he can do whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. And so when he latches on,
yeah,
it's
when
like,
those
that's,
fingers
yeah.
just grasp and clinch down, I think we all know at that point a decision has been made.
And I didn't know if they were going to do it. I didn't know if they were going to go through with it. So it was amazing to see it play out. And it's only we're talking 30 seconds of screen time here,
yeah.
Where Hannibal says, "See, this is all I ever wanted for you, Will, for both of us."
For both of us. Mm-hmm.
And Will says, "It's beautiful."
It's beautiful.
Wraps his arm around, and oh, that before that, when Hannibal embraces Will, because Will sort of drops his head to his shoulder, and
puts
Hannibal
he
puts his face against Will's and then moves it, and it's. I can't even really speak to why it was moving, but it was
a nuzzle.
It wasn't a nuzzle. It was a I'm going to get closer to you.
Mm.
This moment here, I am not close enough. So let me readjust so we can
to be closer together.
Yeah, so we can actually be closer. And then Will's final embrace is that arm wrapped around Hannibal's neck, and they go over
the edge. And we all went, what?
And I'm like, where's Buddy? Where's Buddy?
Yes.
Don't see Buddy.
Yes.
And then what proceeded was a 20 to 30 minute long conversation about whether or not you could actually survive. Yeah.
Can you die? Could you? Are there rocks? Did you see rocks? I saw
there
rocks.
Were rocks. There were way too many
waves,
rocks.
Waves were breaking on rocks. I don't think
it's like, no,
what if
no, the beach is eroding.
They didn't
no.
run and jump,
they
so they've got
a
high
was
a high chance of bouncing off the edge because you've got rocks right over the edge.
Yeah.
So they didn't like take a running leap into the water, so you're not going to get much clearance from those rocks.
But this is what's so brilliant about this finale, and this is why I choose to ignore some things that Brian Fuller has said, is because it truly is either they survived or they didn't.
Oh, yeah.
And you can deal with that however you want. You can sit in that however you choose to. Ophelia, it seems like you are taking the they didn't survive only by logic, but you want them to.
Right.
I want this to be the end. It is too perfect for them to survive this and then have to cheat its way out of how they survived it. This is Reichenbach Falls. This is the final solution in Sherlock Holmes when Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty tumble over the falls together, locked in their death embrace. Neither can live while the other survives. This is it. And it's so perfect because where he wants to go, I don't want to follow.
Oh, okay.
Because Brian Fuller is far too interested in Will becoming a monster, as far as I'm concerned. And he's talking about there's a thing in this is all, I mean, it's not spoilers because the show doesn't exist anymore. It's over, so it's not spoilers.
We're not giving anything away.
But he's saying he wants to deal with a portion of Hannibal that has never been filmed. And the only portion of Hannibal that has never been filmed at this point is Hannibal and Clarice in love on the run.
Hmm.
He came close with Bedelia, but that was more the drugged Clarice segment. Hannibal and Clarice there at the end when we see them, you know, and she's waving. You know, that's what he wants. And I don't want to see Hannibal and Will in Love on the Run. I love the ambiguity of Hannibal and Will's relationship. It's why I'm so confident in the we do not have to box them into, oh, they're in love because like normal people are in love, so they're going to have a relationship like that. That's not it. That's not what this show is.
See, what I was on board for is that because of what Will has done, that they wouldn't be able to do that. Because Hannibal is realizing that no matter how much Will is like him, they will never be together.
Yeah.
Because even though they shared that moment together, Will was just like, this is not what I want. And it is so not what I want. I'm willing to kill you and myself for it.
Right.
So I kind of imagine where they would go after this was not Will and Hannibal together, but perhaps some, a way of continuing the story where they will probably cross paths again and maybe even work together again. But I hadn't imagined Will and Hannibal like on the road and I'm not on board for that.
Mm.
You know, if that's what the intention is.
And we don't know what the intention is because he's being cagey as fuck for a guy who loves to share all his plans.
Yeah. I think maybe at this point, I know a lot of what I've read is he has no plan at this point. He's not adverse to, he knows that there's no season four,
right,
basically. That probably the only thing they may have is a film. So he's trying to keep something open to pursue these characters more because the fans really want it. A lot of the one article I just read was basically, if you think this is the end, and this is what the fans
want. Let it
want,
be the end.
Then this is the end. I'm happy with it. Because it was written before it was canceled. Because there was going to be a season four that was going to lead out of this. But basically, he also wrote it so that if there wasn't a continuation, it could be the end. And even though it's sort of like an ambiguous ending, I think he wanted to give himself an out so that he didn't have to find a weird movie magic, not based in anything in reality, kind of way
of how that incredibly damaged Will could survive the fall, swim to shore, not have lost all of the blood, like all of it.
But we've done it on TV before.
I know we have.
And that's the thing.
And I don't.
Is we've done it. And that's the only way I can defend this.
I feel like it would cheapen the sacrifice to not have this be the end.
Then it's really, how much do the fans want to clamor for a film?
Oh, the fans want to clamor for it. That's all
because
they're doing is clamoring for
like
it.
Like, Brian is okay to leave it here.
Yeah.
That I think perhaps, even though it was a great experience, they all thanked the fans. They got far more out of this than they ever expected. And they are realizing that they had an opportunity to make one of the most amazing 3 years on television that they never thought that they were going to get three years out of. That they, it was like the blessing they never expected.
I mean, they got 10 more episodes than Twin Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
They got to do quick math. More than 20 more than Firefly. I mean, this is a show that was struck down in its prime. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a show that did exactly what it needed to do in the time. It's not like it was canceled
in the middle of a story arc.
If it had been canceled 2 seasons ago, it would have been horrendous because the story isn't close to being finished. And as much as I will watch absolutely anything Brian Fuller wants to put on film featuring these characters, absolutely anything, I am so satisfied here that I cannot imagine him ever doing better with this story.
And I think in a way, I think he kind of feels that himself. Because, like I said, in this interview, it seemed like it was like, oh, well, if the fans think this isn't the end, then maybe it won't be.
Yeah.
But he doesn't sound like he's clamoring to make
another
it happen.
Season.
Yeah. That I think he's pretty satisfied with it. And I'm pretty sad. Like, if nothing ever happens.
This is his mic drop.
I'm happy with this. And it is. It's wonderful to be able to wrap it up. Mm-hmm. Because, man, especially on shows that have a rabid fan base and you don't wrap it up.
Yeah.
You got, I don't know, like really bitter Firefly fans,
well, this,
you know, who
this
we
is,
still
this
are not over it.
This isn't the last scene, though.
Well, no, no. That's a whole different discussion. Yeah, I don't know.
But again, it's
that scene.
I don't think it is different than this discussion. Okay. I think it's relevant to this discussion.
It was done that way to lead into a fourth season.
Well, let's talk about that scene. First of all, Gillian Anderson's cleavage game is on point here. it almost deserves a co-starring credit from this scene alone.
For a lot of people, rewinding.
Yes.
And having the slow-mo.
On their digital copy, they're actually getting tracking snow because of overuse of watching that scene.
I need to see that slow track towards her with the deep, plunging neckline. As she waits in lingerie. Lingerie?
So we pull back from Bedelia. There is a caterpillar-dressed leg on the table.
I have to say, the fact that it looked like a caterpillar when I saw it. And it is highly disturbing.
This is the show Hannibal. There is no way that is not a caterpillar, because eventually it will become a butterfly.
Do you think there's something in it when you cut into it?
It's another turducken.
Exactly.
There's a leg inside a leg inside a leg.
Okay, so
wrapped with
Bedelia, let's talk the scene out just so we have it out. Uh-huh. Bedelia's missing a leg.
Yep.
She grabs a fork from the table and stashes it under her lap.
As the lyrics say,
"I will survive."
I will survive.
Okay, so that's our scene. That's all we get. That's all the information.
But there's a lot going on in the scene. There are three play settings at the table.
And this is something. Okay, so this is another Brian Fuller running his mouth. There are three play settings at the table, period. That is not up for discussion. It's not an interpretation. There are. It is also, this was the best. A reporter asked, so Bedelia cut off her own leg in fear of what Hannibal would do, maybe as an offering. And Brian Fuller thought that was the most batshit insane thing he'd ever heard. He loved it. He thought it was crazy. It's clearly not his intention.
That is the first thing I thought.
Like, holy shit, she's lost her mind.
Right. Yeah. And this is her, if you come to get me, here's my leg.
I actually thought it was like her saying, okay, I know Hannibal's coming for me. I might as well surrender and succumb to his desire to eat me.
And maybe he'll be nicer to me because I'm being so polite and serving
exactly,
him.
Exactly.
I felt that too.
I am the farthest thing from rude.
Yeah. Right. I had a moment of doubt when she grabbed the knife, the fork.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
And that's when, because that's kind of like a Clarice moment of taking the fork.
Well, she could also technically be trying to protect herself, like she's willing to sacrifice herself for this Hannibal.
Oh yeah, you get the leg, but you don't get the rest.
But you don't get the rest, and I'm going to defend it. And she has no idea that Hannibal's never coming. But my other question is, why are there three play settings?
Yeah. Well, for Will,
how would she know to set the table for Will?
Very
true. If the only person who's coming for her to eat her is Hannibal.
But she may have been convinced that Will will have also completed his becoming, especially when she had that conversation so early on.
Yeah.
I think she was so stunned when she's taking that drink and she's just like, holy fuck, you are Hannibal. I think, especially when he goes, the meat is back on the menu. That's kind of what I was thinking, why Will would be there too. I think that at that moment, she realizes that there's a possibility that they may be joining forces. That's how they're going to beat the Red Dragon. And then they're going to be like coming after her. And even I think some of the things I read, even Brian was like, well, they set three play settings, but it wasn't necessarily to indicate that Will would definitely be back at that table. It was only to indicate that at least Hannibal would be back at the table. And that, you know, and what I took from that was that perhaps she was being presumptuous to think that, or was hedging her bets well, let me appeal to both of them, even if only one arrives. I really think she did think that Will was going to survive this and possibly be, you know, I don't know, apprentice to Hannibal or pals or best buds or BFFs or, you know, something that they would wind up there together. Better to have two place settings set than
be rude and only, mm-hmm. yeah.
Because it's hard to, you know, set things up last minute.
Because it's the last thing you want to be.
Exactly. Exactly. So the insanity that is our initial instinct that Bedelia cooked her own leg somehow. That she actually removed her own leg.
That's what I was
trying to figure
out.
And while doing that insane thing,
yes.
was able to fancy cook and fancy set the dinner table. Our initial instinct is very... very far-fetched.
Yeah.
Not the kind of far-fetched that the show is unwilling to go, but far-fetched.
Now I want to say, I've got too many legs.
Oh, Jeffrey. But, so it's basically, this is Brian Fuller confirming that Hannibal and Will survive the fall and go to Bedelia and go to eat Bedelia. That's him confirming it. In the same interview, he throws a weird curveball saying maybe the other two place settings are for Hannibal's Uncle Robert and Lady Murasaki. I don't know.
Murasaki?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe.
I think he's... That's a BS. That's a backpedal, yeah.
That's a BS line right there.
I think it's also just sort of done not to confuse you, but it's basically, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with this show.
Yeah.
I'm not picked up. I don't know what's going on. We may come back 25 years from now when our gum is back in fashion. You know, it's like, I think he really doesn't know what's going to happen
with
this show and what's going on. So it could be anybody. Why go down that road and confirm everything when what's going to happen with this show and if it continues is really up in the air. It's too mercurial to actually come to any conclusion. And I think...
Ooh, that's a good word for it.
Mercurial? Yes.
There is. And I think... And I don't know if... I feel like that I may be the only one that's really into this, but I love the vagueness of it.
Oh, me too.
I love the open-ended. I love that he's not really saying exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And this is quite possibly the most brilliant way to end anything.
I agree.
Because we will all be satisfied into old age that as sad as we are to see this go, it ended at a good place. We won't have any part in our lives, but we'll be like, oh my God, we never knew what happened.
Bring back Firefly.
Right. There's so many things that we never got to finish and we never got to explore this and this was never... And there's lots of TV shows like that people are upset because, you know, there's no bow on it.
This show fulfilled its promise and then some.
Oh,
it was a prequel to Red Dragon. It not only gave us the prequel to Red Dragon,
it gave us Red Dragon,
and it gave us Hannibal, and it gave us huge swaths of Silence of the Lambs just by association.
Exactly. We are more than satisfied at the end of this meal.
Yes.
We can get up and feel like we have explored every course. We're not sitting there going, this is it. And isn't there one more thing?
Maybe that's why I feel so strongly that they didn't survive.
Yeah.
Because this has been such an incredibly satisfying meal. I don't want someone to fuck that up by throwing an extra course in.
Look, a surprise
because
course.
No, there is no doubt. Season 3 is the lesser to season 2.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Part of that is timing, part of that is money, part of that is structure and organization. But it is the lesser. And I feel like there's no way season 4 is the better. Based on now it's a canceled show that is being brought back. Possibly as a movie, so we have 2 hours to explore it. It may be amazing. It may be season 1 amazing.
Yeah.
It may be season 3 amazing, but it's going to be less than season 2.
Oh, yeah.
I feel slightly different. I feel like if you go to a restaurant and you trust the chef, you can walk in and say, surprise me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
exactly how I feel.
Any flavor combination you put together will be good. It may not be as good as the best thing you've ever made me, but it will be good.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I can put my money on it that I'm going to walk out of the restaurant satisfied. Yeah. So I feel the same way about Brian Fuller. Whatever you want to put together out of these characters,
sure,
I will enjoy
it. Exactly. And I'm sure I will. But and the one amazing thing is this show gave us not one, but two amazing finales
in
a single season.
Yes, that's true when you think about it.
Both the end of the Italy arc and the end of this arc would have served as perfect series finales for this show. And I never expected to get to the end and not need more.
That is true, because normally that doesn't happen in television.
No.
It's and very unusual.
As upset as I was about Hannibal's cancellation, I really have been upset about this cancellation. But it's so satisfying.
Yeah.
And it's so perfect.
But I think what Ophelia and I are saying is as satisfied and as perfect as this is,
it could always be better.
I'll come
back for more.
It's not even that it could be better. It actually is.
It's unlikely to be better.
The way that I'm approaching it is that I'm not looking for better. Mm-hmm. I'm really not looking for better. I'm very satisfied with what we had. But you know how sometimes
you just want another helping. I get it. It
tastes so good.
Here,
I'm
going to propose something to the two of you.
Okay.
Okay. Hannibal and Will are dead.
Okay.
In my proposal, that's
in your
it.
World.
This
in,
is how
in your fantasy world.
This is how the Hannibal Lecter story ends.
Okay.
But there are 3 years where Hannibal was just hanging out in an asylum, where Will Graham was off getting married and dealing with his shit. Mm-hmm. And you know who might have showed up at the asylum in those 3 years? A little FBI agent named Clarice Starling. And wouldn't it be amazing if their remake of Silence of the Lambs doesn't need to ruin this ending?
I'd be happy with that.
And could take place in that interim.
And that's why the line that I read about Brian Fuller when he said, at least Hannibal survived. Mm-hmm. I think that is what we all want. I don't think we need more of the Will and Hannibal storyline.
Yeah.
I think we are quite satisfied with that. But we would love to see these characters again. And I think out of all the people we'd like to see, we really want to see Hannibal again.
Yeah.
Because that is the tastiest of all of the things that are here. And the little graham cracker is pretty tasty. But I think
I can ever think about when people use the graham cracker thing is Buster Bluth saying, "Oh, I was hoping you had a graham cracker in there."
I love that we bring Buster Bluth into that. That is so awesome. But that's the thing is we never got, because, you know, we have other people being dicks about their copyright. We never got
Clarice.
Never got Clarice. We've had hints of Silence of the Lambs, but we've never gotten it. And we kind of never got Hannibal Rising, but we're all okay with that.
Yes, I think we're all.
We're all okay with that. But also this whole way in which they're able to cherry pick, because we haven't really done all of Silence, and there's other things we haven't done in some of the other things, and how brilliant Brian can be to create a new world out of the Thomas Harris canon. I'm willing to be open.
Sure.
It would be amazing to do a whole Clarice thing. That would be awesome. Or a variation of it that they can do, where if they never get the rights to use the characters, if they are able to take some time and manipulate it and go, okay, we have to BS it, so we can't make it an entire story arc. Mm-hmm. But maybe we can turn it into a 2-hour movie.
Yeah. And I would totally see Brian Fuller's Silence of Lambs film.
Oh, totally. And then we can do moments with all these other characters that were fleeing.
Yeah.
But not necessarily in a, you know, I'm like holed up somewhere waiting for Hannibal kind of thing, but maybe they can all come into play. They left a lot of things open. They left all these characters. It's like they left all of these possible game pieces in which they can play with at a later date and pick and choose what they want. Chio can freaking come back for all we know.
Oh, let's hope not.
I know we hope not, but he left every piece in play.
Yeah.
In one way, shape, or form. So if we never see them again, we're content. But if he picks them up and puts them back on the board, we're not going to be like, what? That kid was dead. Well, she's dead or he's dead. Or no, there's still enough of a, of our propping of the window of disbelief as we do.
We do.
In film and television. We have all believed bigger bullshit in shows before to bring characters back. And this was more, this was set up more in a way where the BS to bring people back, yes, might be a stretch, but for some of the characters, but for most of all the other ones, not a whole lot.
Sure.
And if we are just to believe that Hannibal survived and Will didn't, or they both survived, and Will is off in Marathon with Molly and Willie or Wally, whatever they're calling him, is Willie on this one.
Walter.
On this one, and they're off in their, uncomfortable politeness that's going on over there. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I think that they could, I don't think Brian Fuller would do something cheap when he came back.
Well, I hope not.
I would like to think that he wouldn't. So because in three seasons,
he hasn't.
He hasn't.
Sure. But let's just get a quick show of hands. Satisfied?
Yes.
Yes.
Raising hands.
Yeah, show of hands, of course.
It's a podcast.
It's the ideal, way to show your assent on a podcast. Yes.
How about all who feel satisfied say aye?
So say we all. Aye. How about that?
So say we all.
So say we all.
It's amazing that we got this. And we are not done talking about this series, and it'll be very interesting visiting the rest of the films through the lens of this series.
Oh, yes.
You know, as we talk about the Red Dragon movie and Manhunter, we can't help but bring it around to this.
Oh, yeah, we're going to bring it around to this. And this, I think what is a gift from the show is it made the books and the movies have a brand new life.
Yes.
I never really examined things and appreciated things in a way that I do now, thanks to this show.
Thanks to this show. So we'll be back with the movies.
Yes.
And then at the end, the last episode of Eat the Rootcast, we'll be looking back on all the media adaptations of this amazing collection of stories that we got from Thomas Harris.
Does this mean I have to watch Hannibal Rising?
We will all watch Hannibal Rising.
I have to read it too. I'm
not reading it. I'll watch it. I'm not reading it.
You're not reading it? No, I'm compelled. I know it's going to be painful.
Well, you read it for us. You
okay.
Take that hit.
Because I think that's what's been, I'm a detail, statistics. I love this. I love doing all that stuff. So I think I'm going to be able to get through Hannibal Rising because I know it's not just to get through a painful book.
Sure.
But I want to see and compare what's going on in the movies compared to the book. Because what's been really fun about this is having read the books, other than Hannibal Rising, and seeing where it came from. And then especially in Red Dragon, being able to go back and then read it again and then seeing all of that play out.
All the texture.
At the very end and how beautifully it's done. It doesn't ruin it. I'm not like, oh, well, I had this image in my head of what it looked like, because I can still read it and come up with my own ideas of who these characters are and what they look like. But they have also provided me with this wonderful, beautiful painting and this picture in which to see all of this. And that rarely happens.
Very true.
That rarely happens. Usually we see stuff made from a book and we're like, oh, you ruined it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mika, where can they find more of you online?
You can find me at Technogeisha on Twitter, Miko Technogeisha on Facebook, at technogeisha.com, and you can also find me at Life on the Swing Set.
Ophelia?
I am at Ophelia Tesla on Twitter and at Ophelia Tesla on Facebook and OpheliaTesla@gmail.com.
And you can find me at Cooper S. Beckett at CooperSBeckett.com and on Life on the Swing Set. The show you can find at Eat the Rootcast on Twitter and Facebook. and email us at info@eattherootcast.com. We are looking for your thoughts and questions and things you'd like us to talk about for our final episode, or things you'd like us to talk about as we go through the films. And eattherootcast.tumblr.com. And while you're there, enjoy the wealth of anagram / porn art.
Every time I go to post there, it takes me way longer than it. I linger.
You just can't get through.
Stop. Thank you to everyone.
Yes.
That we
and thank you to all of our fans who, yes, who comment and leave memes
and
for
who
us
tweet
and tweet
and who send us
just. It's
love
overwhelming. We love it. So please keep doing that. And please join us. If you haven't seen the films, watch along with us. Because, you know, these are some great movies.
They are.
I like the caveat.
That was my caveat. Movies. Yeah.
Yes.
And some of them are almost great movies. Really, then that's pretty good sometimes.
And I think also some of them are great, not because they're really good movies, but they capture a certain something.
Yes.
And considering what I think what's going to be very interesting is a lot of these movies go over a very long period of time, and a lot has changed.
Yeah.
In filmmaking, in our how we look at things culturally, and you know, it's so funny to go back and look at Manhunter and see how incredibly 80s it is.
And that is where we are starting.
Yes.
With Manhunter. And I thought about starting with Hannibal Rising, but I'm going to put that off as far as I possibly can. So we will be beginning with Manhunter, and that'll be coming within the next 2 weeks. I'm not going to commit to next week, but within the next two weeks.
Yeah, we may need a break.
Thank you, fans, for listening.
Yes,
and
this is a labor of love, purely.
It is. There is no profit in this, I promise you.
We're doing this
No one profits from doing TV-related podcasts.
Exactly. We're doing this because we love this
we
and we're
profit
a little crazy.
By being enriched by the work of Brian Fuller. And thank you to Brian Fuller for everything.
Yes.
Oh, and everyone that was involved in
Brian
the
Fuller
show.
To Mass, to Will, to
Will.
Jillian,
to Hugh.
To Jillian, to Lawrence, to Caroline, to Scott
and people. Oh yes,
can't name
Aaron
them all.
And I'm forgetting.
Everybody.
It's been the entire cast.
I was Hannibal.
Gonna, I also really want to put a word out to this crew.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at how these things are shot and all the snow, having done this, I can't imagine doing this in Toronto. I can't imagine doing this in the turnaround time that they had to do, especially in season 3. I can't imagine doing this on the budget they had.
This show is a miracle. This show is like nothing else that has ever been on
this
television.
You want to talk about this podcast being a labor of love. That show is also a labor of love. Because
it
I
must
go
be a cast of Fanimals. Or not a cast of Fanimals.
A cast
but
and crew.
A crew
of
Fanimals.
I think it's a testament to Brian Fuller. It's a testament to the beauty of what they
were doing.
If
you enjoy your job,
exactly,
you'll probably work harder.
Yeah. It seems like there's just a wonderful family here. And thank you for all your hard work. Because, man, you gave us
some of
the most amazing television we've ever seen before. Yeah.
Which is very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us at the table.
Hey, this is Dan Savage from the Savage Lovecast and Savage Love, and you're listening to a Swing Set podcast at Swing Set FM.